This is the one where the troop lead the Daleks on a merry dance through time and space.
There are ghosts.
And Frankenstein's monster.
And the Beatles live on Top of the Pops.
But seriously, it's all very dangerous and we actually lose some major characters.
It's called The Chase.
Here we go!
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Dalek, Stalinude, and the Cybertronic race.
Centaurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to episode 016 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am the Flaphammer.
And I am Ponkin.
And today we will be reviewing, what's it called? The Chase.
The Chase. Yeah. You know what? Like, introducing the podcast just doesn't seem entirely natural without a yes, you are. I don't know. It's a force of habit.
I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, still haven't, even though I've just watched The Chase, I still can't quite make my mind up about it.
Mixed reviews. I absolutely have not decided what I think about this thing.
I mean, there was quite literally a horror show in episode 4.
Yep.
I think that is the only thing that can be said about it.
And it's set in Ghana.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't even find that out until after the horror show.
I will say at the start, I think this episode top and tail quite well. The middle,
yeah,
not quite so sure. But anyway, let's not spoil it.
It's time for a B-Scow, for a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Should we get to the B-Scow?
Yeah, let's do it. This episode starts with the Doctor fixing the space-time visualizer, which, as you'll recall, is an object that he brought back from the Space Museum.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a space-time TV.
Yeah, I initially thought he stole it, but he was actually given it by Tor.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
But anyway, it turns out...
Unsmoked Tor.
In his unsmoked dong. But it turns out this machine can dial into any moment in space-time. So the troops start trying out different random dates. They happen to see Queen Elizabeth talking to Shakespeare, as well as Lincoln giving the Gettysburg Address. But then they discover that the Daleks are actually launching a mission to chase them through time and space and exterminate them.
That is entirely uncharacteristic of the Daleks. Anyway, this gives the troop a bit of a head start, but the Daleks follow wherever they go, from the deck of the Mary Celeste to some sort of weird futuristic funhouse, and eventually to the planet Mechanos, spoiler alert, where the battle gets really rough.
It does. That's probably the roughest battle we've seen so far.
It's amazing. We get like...
It lasts for like 2 minutes. But
yeah,
it's...
and we do get... what she said. And we do get this fantastic robot bumper car scene.
Yeah.
Which is really fun. Anyway, yeah. So that's your B-Scow for this week.
Yeah. But anyway, should we start from the very beginning?
I think we should. In fact, I think you should start.
It's a very good place to start.
Actually, wait. Before we start, let's say this. This was written by Terry Nation.
My favourite nation.
Yeah.
If I could live in any nation, it would be the Terry.
I feel like you're quoting someone very wise.
Yeah.
It was written by Terry Nation. Not his best work so far, gotta say.
No. Well, his work so far has been stupendous.
Yeah.
What was his last one?
The last one was...
Is it Keys?
No, it was Dalek Invasion of Earth, dude.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
which was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, a tremendous Dalek episode.
Yeah, it must be said this is a low light for the Daleks.
Yeah. The story editor for this serial was Dennis freaking Spooner.
Not the Spooner.
The Spoon.
Yeah.
The Spoonmeister. To this day, still cannot remember what the shit Dennis Spooner did. But I remember being really mad at him at some point during Who Back When, so I presume that he wrote something really shit. What was that?
I think it was Edge.
Did he write Edge?
Probably.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah. Oh, Spoonmeister. Will never forgive you. Anyway, do you want
to... As I said, haven't really made up my mind. I thought this started quite promisingly. So the first thing we see, obviously, is the Daleks at the end of the last episode. They're talking to each other about how they're going to travel through time and space and destroy the troop.
Yeah, this is episode 1, The Executioners, by the way.
Yeah, and we get some really funky 60s intro music, which just continues throughout the series.
Yeah, the music in the entire thing is very, like, it's a jingle that should go in the background of some sort of slapsticky comedy. From a Laurel and Hardy movie, which is basically what this serial is, by the way.
Well, it sounded to me more like 60s Belgian jazz.
Belgian jazz?
Yeah, Belgian jazz.
It's very geographically specific.
Yeah. It's just so smooth, and it's not really befitting of the episode. This is meant to be a chase, and like that's what really got me about it. It's like really smooth.
You know what's not befitting of this in this episode or this serial? The title. It's not a chase.
Yeah, it is. kind of is.
It's like a kiss chase. It's very... Okay, it doesn't matter. We're now zooming into the TARDIS, where the Doc is repairing a machine. This is the space-time visualizer. Spoiler alert.
Well, actually, the first thing we see is Susan running about, being as annoying as it is possible.
Pretty sure you mean Vicky.
Sorry, fuck it. Freudian slip. But she's like, she's just being as annoying as it is possible to be. Her irritation index has gone up to,
yeah,
to the max.
I think we need to leave that up to JD to decide.
Yeah, very true.
But yeah.
But she's whistling, she's like poking Ian, he's trying to read.
Oh, she's just super restless. Yeah. Probably incredibly hormonal as well.
And then starts knocking over Barb shit.
Barb is making like a dress or something for Vicky, and Vicky knocks over a bunch of coffee or tea or whatever onto the fabric. Anyway, Doc is repairing this machine, which is, by the way, clearly a completely new prop on set. Like, they could not give this prop any more airtime if they tried.
And it is screeching like a motherfucker. And he starts spouting some scientific techno babble about how it works, which makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But to sum it all up, as Vicky often does for us, she puts it into layman's terms. What's that cereal where they always do that?
I don't know. Anything with the Daleks. I don't know. Oh, wait. No.
No, I'm thinking of something else.
The only thing I can think of is Galaxy Quest.
No. I'm actually thinking of Star Trek.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like in Star Trek, like Bones will say something that's super crazy, and then Kirk will suddenly chime in.
I was like,
no, sorry, it's not. Who is it who usually chimes in with like normal
I don't know.
Dissemination.
Oh, crap. Now I can't really...
You know what? Imagine. You know that trope, huh?
Well, yeah. I can't really say that I remember Kirk especially going... I remember Kirk being told in layman's terms, like in incredibly childish terms by Bones, what Bones meant a moment ago when he said it in actual adult terms, i.e. space shit.
There you go.
Yeah.
But Vicky essentially serves that function, and she tells us it's a TV into time.
Yeah, that's true. We have also, by the way, kind of glazed over the fact that Ian is sitting reading a book called Monsters from Outer Space.
Really?
Yeah. Like, while she annoys Ian, he is reading this book. At the time, I thought, like, oh no. Is this meant to be non-fiction in Doctor Who world? Like, is he reading some sort of non-fiction book entitled Monsters from Outer Space? But it turns out it is actually fiction. He goes, like, oh, it's a little bit far-fetched. It's pretty good.
But really fortuitously, they start picking out dates, and luckily...
You're looking at the STV now.
Yeah, I'm looking at the STV. And they luckily managed to pick out dates where really major things are happening with really major people.
I feel like you're speeding, dude. But it's fine.
I'm not speeding. What have I missed?
Sorry if you think that this is completely unnecessary. 2 minutes and 26 seconds in, Vicky does actually reveal something very, very true about her character in saying that I am redundant around here. Goes to Barb, slapsticks some items onto the dress, that's what we mentioned before. And then, from the machine, from the STV, comes an incredibly loud noise. And this is where, like, there's a little bit of an intro to where Vicky gives an explanation as to what it is. She says her people were trying to invent one.
Right.
So she's never seen one in actual real life, because back in her time, sometime in the future, I suppose, from where we are now, they were still trying to invent one. However, she still insists that she could have repaired it for the Doc. They hadn't even fucking invented it in her time.
But she does have the technical knowledge. She managed to repair something in the last episode, which she'd never seen before.
Space Museum?
Yeah.
She
managed to hack the mainframe of that, like, supercomputer only accepted truth.
So what is the STV? Explain to us, what is the STV?
Essentially, you can pick out any time, any space, and see what's happening there.
Yeah.
Ian says, I want to see Pennsylvania in 1863.
Yeah.
Now, I'm thinking, when he said Pennsylvania, okay, that's like a fairly broad geographic...
That's exactly my notes!
And it's any point in 1863. Like, he could be staring into a field in 1860.
Yeah, exactly. My note here is Pennsylvania is a fucking huge place.
Yeah. 1863 is
He does say September 1863.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay, well, still, that's 30 days to choose from. But he just so happens to happen upon the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah. The guy playing Lincoln is awesome, by the way.
By awesome, do you mean fucking terrible?
Yeah, that is exactly what I mean.
In fact, every American accent in this episode, we'll get to the fucking top of the Empire State Building. Bama. Fucking
hell. Oh, that's amazing. And it's so racist. Like, everything in this story is so racist. Anyway, yeah, so we see the Gettysburg Address. Almost all of it, by the way. I feel like that scene just lasts forever.
Well, it did.
then it's like, yeah, let's see something else.
Yeah, let's see something else, unspecified, and we just happen upon Elizabeth I talking to Shakespeare with Francis Bacon.
I'm pretty sure Babs says something like, I want to see what Elizabeth I is doing in her court. Right. And it happens to be a very important conversation between her and freaking Shakespeare.
And Francis Bacon telling Shakespeare to write Hamlet.
Yeah.
Right? Fucking great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then Vicky turns the STV to 1965,
yeah,
which just so happens to be the year that this is being aired in. And what do we see, if not the freaking Beatles, doing a gig on Top of the Pops?
Now, one of our fans, I can't remember which one, you might be able to, from the comments.
Okay.
Have you read the comments yet?
The comments for this show, the reviews, yeah, the minis? No, I haven't read them.
Apparently.
I tend to not, like, by the way, people, if you now hate me for saying that I haven't read them, I tend to not read them until we break to do your reviews.
Anyway.
Because I don't want to be influenced, man.
I glazed up.
Yeah,
But, yeah.
Plagiarism.
But somebody told us, it's not plagiarism.
No, I know.
I'm quoting them.
Go for it.
But somebody told us the Beatles actually wanted to be on Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
They were actually planning to bring them into the studio to do a live performance just for Doctor Who.
Oh, my God, it's amazing.
Scheduling conflict.
That's a shame that didn't work out.
What we do have is the only surviving footage of the Beatles performing live on Top of Pops.
Wait, the only surviving footage?
Apparently so, yeah.
That is a legendary gig. I've seen that footage before. So you're telling me the footage that I've seen is taken from a Doctor Who? That is amazing.
Well, that's what our fans said. Like, this is the only live footage from Top of Pops. That's what it's.
Oh, I see.
Of the Beatles.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's heavy. But apparently they were huge fans. The Beatles were huge Whovians.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Whovian, totally a legitimate term. So, anyway, so now we see a Beatles gig. My note here, I didn't realize that they were huge fans. That's actually pretty nice. I almost want to take back what I wrote in my notes. I just said, oh, Terry Nation, have a mightier fallen. Anyway, also, this is going to be a screenshot on the website, people. 10 minutes and 22 seconds in. Fast forward if you have the chance. Ian shows off his dancing skills.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing.
It's just so embarrassing. No, like, I'm just imagining him standing in a studio. There's complete silence. He can't hear the music, and he's just bopping.
Yeah.
It's just a very, very bad way to end his run on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now the TARDIS materializes. It seems to me kind of out of nowhere, like on this planet with two suns, and we see the Doctor.
And the Doctor tells us it's safe to go outside.
Obviously.
Like, obviously, yeah. Yes.
It does seem a little bit like he has checked some sort of reading.
Well, actually, this time he says, just a little bit more gravity than Earth, which we see no evidence of.
Oh, no.
Like, I've often thought about, you know, if there was another planet out there that could support our kind of life, if it did have a little bit more gravity, what would that do to the aliens of that planet? Would it make them super strong? Would it make them squat? Would it make them...
No, it wouldn't necessarily make them super strong, because
they'll
have adapted to their own gravity, dude.
Yeah, but if there's more gravity coming down, they're going to need stronger muscles to support themselves to counterbalance the amount of gravity.
Yeah, exactly, right? To counterbalance, i.e.
Yeah.
create an equilibrium, so in the end they'd be just as strong.
But
provided they have the same muscle mass, and they have tendons, and they actually have muscles to begin with.
But compared to, say, Ian, like... they're going to be very strong.
Okay,
whatever.
That is very true. Anyway, so... I was already effed off with this episode at this point.
Why?
Because they haven't pinned, like, they haven't punched an address into the TARDIS. They basically just found out that the Daleks are after them.
Yeah.
They go, oh, well, we've got a head start. We've learned that. Yeah, the Daleks are after them.
Yeah, let's go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. We totally missed that, didn't we? Yeah, so the Daleks, we see you a little bit
no,
of the
no.
Daleks. Is that the first? Oh, that's the first thing you
first,
see. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Anyway, so then they materialize on this planet, and no one remarks that they're there against their will, essentially. No one expresses any concern, like, oh, we didn't say that we wanted to go here, but now we're here.
Yeah, but
no one even checks the freaking oxygen levels. Fuck this episode.
Isn't it just a given fact that they don't know where they're going? In fact, that's how this episode ends. That's how Ian and Barbara get home.
Oh, spoiler alert.
They're of the understanding the TARDIS, like, is directionless. The Doctor has no idea how or where to take it.
Okay, yeah, that is actually a good point. Anyway, so now they're on a desert planet. There's sand everywhere, except the TARDIS is clearly on a very flat surface of a soundstage. And there are very strange figures around that play no part in the serial whatsoever. And they look sort of like petrified soldiers fighting petrified wildcats. I was thinking sort of Pompeii, like, you know, encased in ash.
That could have been interesting.
Could have been very interesting. Doesn't matter. Like, it, are they trees? We don't know. Are they alive? No one finds out.
But Vicky, adding to her irritation index, decides that she wants to know what's over the hill and just runs off.
Yeah, well, she and Ian.
In this unsafe planet full of stick figures.
She and Ian run off.
She runs off. Ian follows.
Oh, right. Yeah, and the doctor gives Ian a TARDIS Magnus.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, this is now essentially a TARDIS GPS.
Yeah.
And it's something that we have never heard of before, and I kind of feel like if they had that at their disposal, that could have come in very handy in several episodes.
They probably should have used it every time. Well, as we used to refer to the Davis principle, it would have never applied.
Exactly.
If they had a GPS telling them where the TARDIS was, it would have never been necessary.
Oh, it would have applied, like if something's in the way.
Yeah, when they get blocked or exactly. Held prisoner. But like in those instances where they've lost the TARDIS, I'd say this would be pretty fucking useful.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Doc, for whipping it out now.
Like, should probably keep it on his key set, you know?
Anyway.
Keep it next to the key so that every time you leave TARDIS, you know how to get back.
Yeah. Oh, and spoiler alert, there's only one TARDIS magnet.
Yeah.
Like, they don't each have one. There is one of them. So, yeah. Vicky's run off, and she finds some smelly stuff, and Ian kind of jokes around that it's probably blood, which is like, okay, all right, cool. They exit stage left, and we see a very weird sort of tail/tentacle thing bob out of the sand. It's one of the Maya beasts. Cut to DB, that's Doc and Babs, if you're just tuning in, resting on the ground, taking in some cosmic rays, and Doc singing.
Yeah, she kind of tells him off for it, but he says, I could charm the nightingales out of the trees.
Oh, lovely! That's a very nice note.
Lovely little ego slot.
Yeah, then Bob hears a very odd noise, and this is the only reason I mentioned it before, it's the STV making that noise again. So she goes in to turn the STV off, and blammo, this is where it happens. Daleks are on the screen.
Yeah. No, Daleks were on the screen before. They're on the screen again.
Okay, so Daleks are on the screen again. Sorry about that, dude.
But what she sees is that the Daleks are now on their way. They've realised that the troops run off, and they've got some means of tracking where they've gone.
Yeah, they say they've completed their time machine, and they found the enemy TARDIS in the Zingara Desert of the planet Iridius. Just want to make a small note here. I made a little bit of a point to JD saying that it kind of Fs me off whenever they go to a place that is more or less named after what it's like. So this is an arid desert called on the planet Iridius.
Yep.
Same thing happened on Marinus. Same thing happened in, I can't remember which episode. Oh, Phobos.
Why does that necessarily have to F you up?
No, I take it back. I've actually completely changed my mind.
Okay, but so in those instances where they colonized a place, I think it's acceptable.
No one's colonized this place, dude. This is the planet Iridius.
Okay.
And it wasn't always a desert planet. We find out very soon that it used to be like this really, like, it used to be wetlands, basically. And then the two suns suddenly turned up out of nowhere and turned the planet into a desert.
Okay. English translation? Could that explain it? Like,
I don't know. The Daleks refer to it as Iridius, not humans.
Okay.
Okay, it doesn't matter. I just want to say apologies to JD, because I totally take it back. But also, just want to raise a point that JD mentioned off the record, that Terry Nation kind of has this thing that he does, where, for lack of a better science fiction term, he will basically just add space as a prefix. Like, this is the space police force, or this is the space dial, that sort of thing. And I feel like kind of naming a planet Iridius, or having the Marinus place, or whatever, all those names, kind of fits in kind of pretty well with that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, well, it's like a weird naming convention. I kind of like that.
It's more creative than just having space.
Yeah. All right, anyway, come back to the Daleks. Anyway,
so what is the next thing?
The Daleks provide both standard expository dialogue and also backstory, while exclusively saying things that surely all other Daleks present already know and agree with.
But they are a soldier race. It is good to keep repeating things, you know.
That's true.
It keeps things in the forefront of their mind.
Yeah, they are a soldier race, but now they are dispatching a specific assassination group to kill the Doc and the humans. Like, and this is the assassination group that is going to take the time machine and chase them. They are a assassins. Let's put a pin in that. Carry on.
But obviously, having seen this on the monitor, there's a big scramble, big rush to get Ian and Vicky, get back to TARDIS, fuck off somewhere else.
Yeah. Cut to Ian and Vicky.
Cut to Ian and Vicky, and they found a ring in there.
So dumb. Oh, God. Oh.
Ian starts pulling it.
Oh, wait. Oh, hang on. Sorry. This is a note to what I said just a moment ago. Ian, as they run down the sand dune, he says there is no, and I quote, space city in sight. Thanks, Mr. Nation.
But surely, if it's, like, encased within the atmosphere of the planet, it's not a space city.
No, but it's a planet somewhere in space.
So surely everything is, by definition, in space.
Whatever.
Yeah, okay, so
he finds this ring, pulls it, and it opens a door in the ground.
Yeah, they don't seem concerned about the fact that there is a ring in the ground that is clearly, you know, created by an intelligent life form. They're like, oh, let's just pull this ring. It's fine. Yeah. Vicky actually gives a little bit of kind of a hint that, oh, there's something bad. I got a bad feeling about this, because she says it sort of reminds her of some childhood story, I think it was. Or there was a ring in the ground in her childhood home, and they said that when you pull the ring, some monster's going to come out. Some absolute twaddle. I can't remember. It was not important.
I don't care about her backstory.
All right, sorry.
But
I don't care about her presence.
After this, there's a terrible sandstorm.
Wait, dude. They climb inside the thing.
Yeah, obviously they climb inside. And the Doctor and Barbara can't find... Doctor and Barbara can't find...
Yeah, but wait, hang on. What happens inside? They climb inside, dude. Okay, so they climb inside this cave, I guess, and blam, a tentacle, just like before, slides a plexiglass cover over the entryway, and we now see the creature. This creature is a so-called Maya beast, according to the credits of this first episode, but also later on the Iridians, idiots. And Ian now needs to basically take a page out of Luke Skywalker's cave survival handbook, because they are in the cave with the Maya beast, being very scared.
Yeah.
Let's put a pin in that as well. Go ahead.
So then, there's a terrible sound. Storm.
Yeah.
The TARDIS gets completely buried, and the Doc and Barb can't find it.
Yeah.
They're out looking for Ian.
And they basically get completely buried as well. We get like this time cut to the next morning, because at this point it's gotten super dark. Like, it took maybe 5 seconds for nightfall to arrive.
So the sun's come up at exactly the same time, though, right? They're on the exact They're on the exact same orbit.
I guess Iridius is on a parallel orbit to both suns or something, because the suns wouldn't be orbiting.
Well, that's
Iridius would be orbiting the suns.
That's quite true, isn't it? Like, a planet orbits a sun.
Bingo.
And if there are two suns...
Not only Doctor Who, also Who Back When, a very educational show.
There must be two gravitational pulls.
Yeah, it's probably doing like an eight, like a loop-de-loop around the two suns.
But surely that wouldn't mean the two suns were there at the same time at all times.
I don't know, dude. It happened on Alderaan. No, not on Alderaan. What's the planet? Wait, shit. Wait, hang on. Star Wars tangent. What's the planet where Luke Skywalker grows up?
Oh.
Shit. Sorry, Star Wars fans.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Cut to the next morning, and something is emerging from the sand. It's a Dalek.
It is a Dalek, and it looks like... It's like this knobbly metal cock gradually getting harder, just like bobbing out of the sand. And the Dalek is actually making noises, like grunting noises. Like, it's just, it's so, it, there's sand in all the gears, and everything is just going to...
This is really grinding my gears.
It is pretty amazing. End of episode, and just want to point out, what happened to Ivy? We don't know, because we had a time cut from last night when they entered the cave and stood there still, screaming.
I couldn't find it in my notes.
No, it doesn't happen.
They just disappeared.
It literally doesn't happen.
But yeah, blam, episode 2.
The Death of Time.
The Death of Time, which is a really promising sounding title.
Yeah, exactly. Also, how does it bear any relevance to this story?
None whatsoever.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Time in no way dies. Like, nothing's, like, whatever.
So now more Daleks appear, and they say they can locate the TARDIS with their seismic detectors.
Yeah.
And this is something that I want to say to refer back to the first pin. One of the Daleks asks the Dalek commander if they are to take the troop alive. Mm-hmm. But they are an assassination squad! And surely they will have discussed this by now.
Yeah, by definition, an assassination squad doesn't really take prisoners.
And we still don't know what's happened to Vapor Rub and Sir Ian.
Well, and why would they want to capture them anyway?
Mm.
Like, what are they going
to
do with them?
Absolutely this is no reason to capture them.
This is just a spite mission, right?
Yeah, basically.
Like, there's no strategic point to catching the troop. It's literally spite.
Yeah, and also, why do they have to...
Seriously. All these resources.
Actually, let's just maybe pull apart the logic of the Dalek master plan here, because they try to follow them through time. Like, they try to go to the next place the troop is going to as the troop is going there. Why not just go... What if they can track where they're going, and they have a time machine that we know is very precise, we'll find out is very precise, why can't they just go to that place ahead of them?
So you're saying it's already defined where the TARDIS is going to go.
Well, you know what? Okay, check this out. So they're going to Iridius.
I don't know.
They follow them to Iridius. Then they go to the next place. Let's not spoil that yet. They go to the next place. The Daleks, instead of going to the next place, go, let's stay on Iridius, but let's go back in time one day and just stay here and wait for
them. Mm.
Why don't they do that?
Yeah.
Idiots.
I don't know. It's like whenever you get into a time discussion like that, it just kind of buries itself.
Speaking of buried itself.
It's a circular argument.
Dock and Babs.
The next thing we see. What is it?
It's Dock and Babs, Vault hiding.
I thought the next thing we saw was a silver man appearing, who is Meridian.
Very soon. Dock and Babs are Vault hiding from a Dalek, and just as they decide to go find the TARDIS, they're suddenly surrounded by Iridians.
No, before that, we see an Iridian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he turns up, he's just looking what's going on.
This is not the guy who gets shot, because that's later on.
Is that later on?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's like in 15 seconds. It doesn't matter. They're basically the same
anyway,
time.
Carry on.
Are you sure?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so, fine. Now we get just basically a cutscene of Chesterfield and Vapor Rub reacting to the Maya Beast. Hours have passed, mind, and running down the cave, sorry, they're running down the cave, but like hours have passed, and they are still standing where they stood last night when the Maya Beast closed the cave gap. Literally the same place. So now they're running down the cave, only to find another Maya Beast. Ian throws a rock at it, and then they run back. Cut back to the Daleks, and this is where they kill the Iridian.
Okay, so they kill the Iridian, and then Barb and Doc run into a bunch of Iridian.
Yeah.
And this is where we get the explanation of what's going on this planet. The two suns are getting closer, they actually say.
Oh, okay.
They're actually getting closer to the planet, which is why it's turned into a desert-like place.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse. And the reason there are so many Maya Beasts is because that's all that survived. They were the only creatures that were tough enough to actually survive this.
Yeah, in addition to the Iridians, we should say, are clearly like fish people.
Yeah.
Like, they look like dudes in spandex. There are, again, no chicks. There are dudes in spandex, and there's like this massive blowfish in the process of eating their heads. And that's what they look like.
And you'd think on a planet that has been completely evaporated,
yeah,
fish people would be the first to die.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So,
but they're really friendly.
They're super friendly.
And they want to help them find Vicky and Ian.
Yeah. And they say, well, okay, so the thing is, holy crap, they probably entered one of the caves or something.
Mm-hmm.
But they are just about to. I don't think I'm jumping ahead. But the Iridians have. Exactly. Coincidentally, at this point, decided to detonate the entrance or whatever to the old city, the old Iridian city, now taken over by Maya Beasts. But with Vicky and Sir Ian trapped inside, mm-hmm. there's no way they're going to survive.
Yeah. So cut back to the Daleks. They found the TARDIS, but they need to dig it out, which I found was a really interesting point. How would a Dalek go about digging something out of the sand?
Well, we already know exactly how they're going to do it, because they even say it. They're like, oh, well, we found the TARDIS. It's buried underground. Let's find some of the locals and enslave them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. By the way, we did skip one thing. When we find out that there's, like, no chance of survival for Vapor Rub and Sirian, we smash cut to a different latex fish gimp detonating the explosives. So they're clearly dead now, right?
Yeah, that's the end.
Okay. Yeah. And Babs and Doc, they spend about 2 seconds contemplating the loss of Sirian and Vicky No Pants before being offered food and shelter by gimps 1 and 2. And then we cut downstairs where Doc is eating what you can only assume is a combination of Iridium gimp roll and sand, and tells Babs to stop being silly or whatever. Because Babs is like super worried about Vicky and Ian.
Yeah, okay.
And then she has a nap.
At this point, 2 Iridians come in and take the Doctor into custody. And when he asks why, they say that the Daleks have communicated to them they must hand them over.
Yeah.
And
or they're going to, like, kill everyone.
And being gimp pussies, they have to. Like, they're really nice people, but they really don't want to fight. They know nothing of the Daleks. They don't want to put up an effort, so they're just going to hand the troop over.
Yeah.
Is their plan.
Yeah, pretty much. And now we cut to Vicky.
And just to add a little bit of suspense, they're going to be handed over at sunset, which is in just 2 hours' time.
Yeah, exactly. 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Like, Daleks give 2 hours. Grace.
But it's not just that. It's in 2 hours' time. We are... practically watching this in real time. Mm-hmm. The episode is maybe halfway done at this point, and we will see the 2 hours have been passed in approximately 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there isn't a time cover or anything. So cut to Vicky, who is, well, Vicky and Ian, they both survived, but Ian is unconscious. So Vicky takes this opportunity to go up to the surface, because apparently that's not a problem, even though they're supposedly sealed in. So she goes up to the surface. Coincidentally, this is exactly where the Iridians have meticulously completed the TARDIS retrieval, and then the Daleks, immediately upon getting the TARDIS, which is ridiculous, by the way, because it's not just like, let's get the TARDIS so that we can see it, so that we can destroy it. It is literally, let's plonk the TARDIS on the surface perfectly and have the Iridians spend what must have been hours
dusting the edges.
Exactly.
To make sure it's just on top of the sand, just so, and then let's start shooting at it.
Yeah, so they kill the Iridians, and then they try to destroy the TARDIS, but they fail because their weapons just aren't strong enough, and they leave 2 Daleks on guard, and then blammo, we cut back to the cave, and the elders have now made up their minds. There are 2 hours to go before they are to be
taken to the Daleks.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we fade to Ian, and he can't find Vicky, obviously, because she's off on like a Rumspringer. And then Vicky, on her way back, one might presume, gets captured by a fishman and taken to Doc and Bab. So now those three are reunited. And then all of a sudden, it's time. So maybe 30 seconds ago, we found out that they have 2 hours to go. And now
they're about to be taken.
Exactly.
Well, maybe they just decided to do it early. No use in.
Or maybe it's like, we have to
time to uncover the TARDIS.
Yeah, exactly.
Some time must have passed.
But in any case, the troop are very lucky, because just at the point they're being taken to like the main airlock bit, the Maya Beast attacks.
Yeah.
And the whole process is delayed, and the troop manages to get away and make it all the way back to the TARDIS, in fact.
Well, they make it back to Ian. Ian, first of all, before they make it back to anyone, Ian is back on the surface now. He's woken up, he's back on the surface,
and
he sees
the TARDIS. Which is like 20 yards away from where he's standing.
Yeah, it's probably the same place where Vicky popped up before.
Yeah.
He pops back down, is reunited with the gang, and then basically goes, listen, I've got a killer plan, guys. I'm going to fashion this MacGyver kit out of Bab's replacement cardigan.
Given that this is his last, like, ever serial, it's quite appropriate that his escape plan involved cardigans.
Oh, absolutely.
The Doctor has a great line here, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
We're trying to defeat the Daleks, not start a jumper sale.
I missed that. That was amazing.
But yeah, essentially his plan is to trick the Daleks into digging themselves into a hole by shooting around the whole area so much.
Yeah, and they use the card. He puts the cardi and Doc's coat over not the entire hole, part of the hole, and hopes that the Dalek will stand on the cardigans and fall down. Which is
perfect plan, right?
Absolutely impossible, right? But it turns out that is exactly what's going to happen. But first, we get Ian and Doc starting to make noise to lure the Daleks onto the trap.
Yeah.
And that is ridiculous. Just absolutely ridiculous.
It's like taming wildebeest or something. This is great.
But yeah, they make it back to the TARDIS. But
yeah, it works perfectly. They escape into the TARDIS. And it looks like everything's going to be fine at this point. This could actually be the end of the serial.
Yeah, but the Daleks are now going to pursue them in
It's been decreed from Skara or whatever. They must pursue to the ends of the Earth.
Yeah.
Boom. Episode 3, Flight Through Eternity.
Oh, God, this is going to be a long episode.
Eternity really isn't all that interesting. And also, this, like, journey through time and space. They go to one alien planet.
Yeah.
And then revisit, like, only the last 100 years of human history. I've got lots of problems with the places they go, the things they do. Like, episode 3 and 4 are washouts. Quite honestly, let's
kind of feel like 5 is as well, to be honest. All right, anyway,
so,
yeah, go for it.
So the Doctor tells us, at the start of the episode, I don't think we shall run into them again. But obviously, we know we've got 4 episodes left at this point.
But then the time path detector goes off, and that's where he basically has to correct himself.
Yeah,
and
he says that this gadget, this time path corrector, has been in his ship ever since he created it, is what he said. Like, ever since he constructed his ship.
He constructed the ship.
That's what he said.
Oh, wow. Someone retconned that later on.
I know. This is weird, right?
Yeah.
But you can soundbite it, like, if you want.
Oh, I totally believe you, dude.
What the hell? But ever since he created the
ship. He's never used this device. Yeah. This is the first time it has ever come in useful.
Yeah. And the only reason it's going off now must be that there's another time machine traveling along the same path as they are. So that's he right. constructed a device in the event that something that he deems incredibly unlikely were to come to pass.
Yeah.
So then we get the opening credits, and during the opening credits, just want to point this out, we have the first instance where we see the TARDIS inside the time vortex.
Oh, yeah.
And it is actually very much like a 1965 equivalent of the current opening credit sequence.
Yeah, and we see this a few times in this episode.
Yeah.
And it's got that crazy 60s music.
Yeah.
Which completely takes away from the pacing of the episode. Like, there's no sense of urgency. Like, the Belgian jazz just kills it.
So then we get a shot of the interior of the Dalek time machine, and it looks kind of half super high budget and half cobbled together using milk cartons and Pritstick. And we get some Dalek techno babble, and
essentially they're just examining the Tunker, and they've worked everything out, basically.
Yeah.
Where the Doctor's going, what to do.
Yeah. We also get, I think, the first instance of what JD was referring to, I think that we mentioned the last time we did an episode, that this is essentially Dalek comedy, or Daleks trying to do comedy, because we get a Dalek trying, well, not trying, a Dalek earning, like he gets the question, where are they, or whatever, like, have you tracked them, or where are they heading, mm-hmm. and he just goes, they're going to, insert location.
Mm-hmm.
A Dalek erming and eyeing, that's kind of slappy, as in slapsticky.
I was really pleased when we got back to the TARDIS to find Ian wearing a very fetching white tracksuit. Really brought out his tone.
Yeah, it really does.
But no sooner do we see the fetching white pantsuit, TARDIS starts coming down in New York, and we get tons of stock footage.
Wait, hang on. We find out there is actually one very important revelation, and that is the Doctor, spouting some techno babble, says that it takes their computer 12 minutes to recalculate.
Oh, yeah.
And that means that they, wherever they land, they need to hold on for 12 minutes.
I thought it was that they were 12 minutes ahead of the Daleks. And didn't he find out that it was now down to 8? So the Daleks are...
I think that's next time. The next jump, it goes down to 8. Yeah, all right. Yeah, sorry, you're completely right. Yeah, the 12 minutes ahead of the Daleks. So yeah, but now they're going to be able to land in a few minutes, and then we get the stock footage montage of New York. Oh, God. Dude, please explain this entire scene.
Like, I've summed it up in a couple of lines, because it was just incredibly dull. So we got a ton of stock footage of New York,
mm-hmm.
And then we get... basically an entire tour guide of the top of the Empire State Building. It's a man standing there giving a tour.
Is he from Italy, do you reckon? Is he meant to be an Italian-American?
I'm assuming that... well, obviously, I'm assuming they're all English.
But is he meant to be...
the worst American accents imaginable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's meant to be Italian-American.
Mm. And there's one guy in the tour group in particular, this...
well, he's just sort of hanging off the back and he's looking out.
Yeah, but he's like the stereotypical undereducated cowboy hat adorned chap from Alabama.
Yeah. He's got the worst accent.
Yeah, he really does.
I think we need a soundbite of his accent. Anything he says.
Okay, soundbites?
Soundbites.
Soundbites.
Yeah! I figured it, I knew I was right!
There you go. That's what he sounds like.
So the TARDIS emerges. This guy is so dumb, he thinks it's like, oh, I'm on a movie set. That was a pretty perfect approximation of his act.
That is an amazing impersonation of that guy.
But Barb steps out, starts asking him what year it is. You trying to trick me?
And we get a few jokes, like, what time is it? And he, like, checks his watch, like, no, what year is it? Like, oh, my gosh. Hey, gosh darn it, if I didn't think you'd be joking with me.
Yeah.
And she goes, yeah, what year is it in Alabama?
There isn't actually very much point to this scene, other than to see...
which year does he say it is?
1966.
1966. Okay, I've got a question for you right now, Flapjack.
Sure.
They want to go home, right? And when they go... spoiler alert, I'm assuming you've seen this. They go to 1965, they go, what are 2 years between friends?
Yeah, so what's 3 years?
Like, exactly, why don't they just... yeah, stay in New York City, Babs and Ian. Just take the lift down. It'll take you 7 minutes to go down.
They are being chased by that.
Yeah, but if they get in the lift, if they get on the staircase to go downstairs, that's fine. The Daleks aren't going to chase them down the stairs.
Yeah, but they're kind of fucking the Daleks. Like, the way they left, it was, like, reasonably amicable. This wasn't going to be amicable if they left. Just fucking leave the Doctor and Vicky in. Like, they can't. Okay. I know what you're saying. Like, it does make sense. Like, they could go home.
So annoyed
but
by this.
But my point was essentially, there is no point in them going to the Empire State.
Oh, no.
Like, other than to see the slapstick stylings of Banner. Like,
yeah.
That is all, it's just like a vehicle for this guy. Like,
okay, I reckon there are two reasons why we get this location. Reason number one, we already know that in Terry Nation stories, we have to have a different location in every single freaking episode. And lots of different life forms. And reason number two, the BBC suddenly appropriated some American stock footage.
Yeah.
That's it.
Or maybe, like, Doctor Who was starting to build an audience in America? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Although, I don't
know. I don't think they were big over there.
No, probably not. But in, like, post-2005 Doctor Who, there are very obviously episodes where they've set them in America to captivate the American
audience. Oh, definitely, yeah, yeah.
Like, the one with... Which president was it? It was Nixon, wasn't it?
I can't remember.
There was an episode with Nixon.
Okay.
Matt Smith era. And it was just down there.
But he wears a cowboy hat for a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
But no, that's the episode.
Oh, that is the episode?
Yeah, the one where River Song shoots.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The astronaut thing.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoilers.
For like 50 years.
Okay, so yeah, anyway.
But Ian says, this isn't a very good place to meet the Daleks. There's people everywhere. We don't want to destroy the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
So let's leave. So they get back in the TARDIS. Bama turns around. Oh, where is it done gone?
Yeah.
Because it just disappeared.
Because he wants to put it on celluloid.
Yeah.
Then he turns around again.
And the Daleks have turned up.
Yeah.
He still thinks they're from a movie.
Yeah. So, he just laughs.
Yeah. Basically. Like, you're much faster than those other guys or whatever. So my note is more comedy as Bama turns around and they disappear as well. And the tour group comes back and thinks that Bama is just a mental because he's,
yeah,
like, stamping on the floor.
Yeah, and now he's about to be taken into custody for being a total nutbag. So basically the troop have wrecked this poor, innocent imbecile's life.
But what I'm saying, this whole scene took like 10 minutes out of the episode and added nothing.
Nothing. Nothing between the end of episode one and the start of episode six adds anything. So anyway, meanwhile, inside the TARDIS, the Doc is using a screwdriver for the first time in Doctor Who history. And for a while there, I thought it was going to be a sonic screwdriver.
One.
Yeah, but it's actually a regular screwdriver.
Right, okay.
And they're about to land again. So where do they materialize, Flabby?
So if we come to, they're on the deck of a ship.
Yeah.
That's all we know at this point.
Yeah, Ian's seasick.
Yeah, Ian's not feeling well, goes back inside TARDIS, and Barb goes for a wander.
Yeah.
And she's sort of captured by I think he's the captain.
I think he's the second in command, because right. He then goes to the captain.
Yeah, he's the bosun, isn't he? Whatever.
Yeah, okay.
She's captured by...
I've got them down as Captain Stubing.
One of the crewmen. And he strongly implies he's going to take her downstairs and have her gang raped.
Yes, I don't know why I'm laughing at that, but yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Then all of a sudden, Vicky turns up.
Yeah.
Bludgeons Gopher.
Yeah.
Totally bludgeons him. It's the worst bludgeoning in the history of TV. Like, she doesn't even tap him on the head. He goes down, and then Babs thanks Vicky, and Vicky just goes, no, that's fine. As though it is nothing. She's just possibly killed someone. And this is a reference to what you were saying when we did the rescue. I don't remember him saying that he was gonna, you know.
It's strongly implied.
Okay, he did imply that he was gonna blast her. But still, I feel like it's a reference back to what you were talking about when we recorded our review of The Rescue, that Vicky, having lost her mermaid bukkake monster,
mm-hmm.
Sally, or Sandy?
Oh,
Sandy.
Yeah, Sandy.
Sandy has now basically lost her soul. It's just this very vicious, evil child. She's basically a female version of the Omen Kid. Anyway. So then Ian walks into frame and Vicky...
Slapstick alert.
Yeah, bludgeons him as well. And then the Chiquitas helps Ian back into the TARDIS. They dematerialize. That's literally it. But even though we now don't need to see any more about what's going on the ship, we are treated to, I shit you not, ladies and gentlemen, who have yet to see this episode, we are treated to 2 minutes of Captain Stubing and Gopher looking for stowaways aboard the Mary Celeste.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, and what I'm going to say to you is If you haven't seen these episodes yet, try watching episode 1, episode 2, episode 5, episode 6, and see if it makes any difference to the story arc at all.
Oh, that's a very good point.
If you just cut these episodes complete, it would work.
Skip 3 and 4.
It would work exactly the same.
And it would probably add to your experience.
Can you imagine? Like, so when I watch modern TV series, like, I try to watch modern TV series when they finished, because I like to watch a few in a row.
Yeah.
Like, waiting a week, it's really hard. I really don't like waiting a week.
Agreed.
Can you imagine waiting a week only to see this episode?
What an absolute disappointment.
Fucking hell.
Anyway,
inevitably the Daleks follow. Again, they start asking questions about the time travelers to the seamen.
They don't even get a chance to, because the seamen, they just panic, and they literally jump overboard.
No, the Daleks are asking questions, but the seamen don't respond. They just start joking. Because they think it's like a curse, or it's they're ghosts, or whatever.
Yeah, but how? Why would they think that?
Well,
like, there's even a woman holding a baby jumping overboard.
If I was in the middle of the sea and I saw a Dalek, I'd be pretty.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, so everyone jumps overboard, and there is something I do want to point out here. When we see the captain, the captain is basically being pushed. What it's called, I don't know, like navy lingo, but the you know, the part of the boat where the wheel is, I guess it's a few steps up, it's like maybe 10 steps up.
Okay, yeah,
yeah. So he's pushed by a Dalek up towards those steps, climbs up those steps like backwards, and then jumps overboard.
Mm-hmm.
Then cut to the Daleks are there. There's, as far as we know, no one left. There is actually one dude left, but completely inconsequential. But this is a shot on the website, people, because there's a Dalek up or by the wheel.
Yeah, I saw that.
How is that possible? That.
I made a note of that, and it's even said later in the episode.
They don't like steps.
Yeah. When they go into the Transylvanian place.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Ian says...
You mean the Ghanaian Transylvanian place?
The temple run tomb.
Yeah.
Basically, it looks exactly like the temple.
Oh, it does.
Ian says this is a good place to fight the Daleks because there are loads of steps.
Yeah.
No idea how the Dalek got up there, but whatever. We are treated again to another search of the ship while we watch the Daleks search the Mary Celeste. Yes,
for no reason whatsoever.
We also see a plaque saying it's the Mary Celeste.
Yeah, that's true.
Great. Like, fantastic. Thank you for that. That really added to the story. But back to the TARDIS, this is where we find out. The Doctor said at the last instance, when he checked, the Daleks were 12 minutes behind. Now they're only 8 minutes behind, and they're closing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So each time it's going to be less. They're going to have to stand and fight.
Yeah, exactly.
At some point.
Exactly.
Dun-dun-dun. So episode 4.
Yeah, Fate of the Vortex, end of episode. Episode 4, Scooby-Doo and the Journey into Terror.
Oh, God.
This is the worst of them all.
Cruel.
This is terrible.
It's a cruel episode.
Cruel to all fans of this show.
Yeah. So we open up at the Temple Run Tomb, and it does look exactly the same.
Yeah, it's like this cobwebbed castle. Right, they materialize right beside this massive staircase, fully equipped with statues carrying bowls of dry ice and plenty of dust.
Yeah. Ian thinks it's a really good place to fight the Daleks, as I mentioned, because Daleks don't like stairs.
Yeah, that's the first time it's acknowledged in Doctor Who history, methinks. The worst fake bad ever appears. Please, let's just point out
There's lots of worst things ever.
Fuck it, I'm going to screenshot that as well, because it's not on a wire, it's like on a rope. It's terrible. Anyway.
But given what we find out at the end of the episode, maybe that's not so ridiculous. They are in like a theme house, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it was on a rope, who knows.
That's true.
So they decide to split up.
Yeah, but first we got to say, Doc reckons that they are in Central Europe.
Yeah.
Judging by the decor.
Ian thinks they're in Central America or something, and he thinks they're in Central.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Who cares?
So the troop decide to split up, inevitably. Yeah. The Doc goes off with Ian, Barbara and Vicky stay with TARDIS.
Just want to point out, we're now 2 minutes into the episode, which means the Daleks are probably about 6 minutes behind them. Just want to point that out.
But essentially the whole place is spooky.
Yeah.
There are skeletons falling, ghostly beings appearing, there's a weird laboratory.
Yeah, all of this accompanied by scary noises and a xylophone.
Yeah. So they run into Frankenstein's monster fairly quickly and don't really seem to think much of it.
Not really, no.
Yeah, it's just like, it's fine. It's like, oh, hello. Don't they even start talking to him?
Well, they go upstairs, as in the men are upstairs, the women are downstairs. And yeah. The men, they see this lab, there's someone clearly lying on a slab, and Doc goes, I want to see what's on that table. Goes down there. The dude on the table wakes up. It is literally Frankenstein's monster. He is wrapped in bandages like a mummy. Want to put a pin in that, because in a moment, he's going to be wearing a suit. And he's got, like, you know, bolts in his neck and a scar on his head and all that jazz. He looks up at them, goes, and then literally lies back down again. No problem whatsoever. The Daleks are now likely about 4 minutes behind them, by the way.
Then we cut to Vicky and Barb, who run into the fucking worst Count Dracula imaginable.
Yeah, not just worst Count Dracula, he's also the worst dubbed Count Dracula.
Yeah.
He is, the dubbing is terrible.
Like,
why did they dub him? Why, did you have to dub him?
But, like, it's, what I found most offensive for some reason was his teeth. Like, were...
Oh, they're made out of, like paper.
Felt.
Yeah, felt.
Yeah. You could actually see the fold in them.
Yeah. Anyway.
And then Barb comments, just in case we weren't clear on what was going on here, says to Vicky, do you think there's something strange going on around here? You run into Count Dracula.
Yeah. Actually, the Count Dracula, all he ever says is, I am Count Dracula. That's it.
No, he says, good evening.
Good evening, I am Count Dracula. That's it. And then he disappears as well.
Yeah.
At this point, my note is actually that Frankenstein's monster and Dracula, they are the Yetis of this story. Turns out they're not, because they're going to make a reappearance.
Let's discuss it at the end, because lots of stuff. I want to discuss with you what you think exactly happened.
Okay, yeah. I'm not entirely sure, but I will have devised a theory by then.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
At that point, Barb gets trapped, like, inside one of those revolving doors.
Before she does that, Vicky disappears without a trace.
Where did she go?
We don't know.
Okay.
Barbara looks at Vicky, then looks at the wall where Dracula disappeared into.
Mm-hmm.
Then she turns around. Vicky's gone, and when she's turned around and leaning against the wall spins around. So this is a recycled trope and, I presume, prop from Keys of Marinus.
Right. Could well be.
And then we get a screaming blonde.
Yeah.
Probably undead, smoking hot, by the way, screaming upstairs.
Is she meant to be someone, or is she...
I think she's just like a creepy...
Just like a general screaming...
Ghost lady.
Ghost lady. Lady.
Yeah, okay, I guess.
But Ian gives us the first clue as to what this place might be.
Yeah, entirely wrong, by the way.
Entirely wrong. It would have been great, actually.
Oh, wouldn't it be fantastic?
The theory he and the Doctor deduce would have been great. So Ian says the whole thing feels very familiar. It's exactly the sort of thing you'd expect to see in a night.
Yeah.
And the Doctor comments, it only exists in the recesses of the human brain.
Yeah, so somehow the TARDIS allegedly has materialized in, like, the subconscious, the collective subconscious of human fear.
Yeah, which is great, because the Daleks cannot land inside a human brain.
Yeah.
Which, to me, if that had been true.
Yeah. Stay there, let's fix the machine, and then leave.
No, that's true. But if it only exists inside the recesses of the human brain, how can the Doctor go there?
Oh my god, that's a good point!
Like, he can go there just as much as the Daleks, right?
You would presume.
Like, it's exactly the same. Have we been told at this point the Doctor's an alien?
Yeah,
like, has it been mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. But, well,
and the Daleks do refer to them as humanoids.
No, humans. He says the Doctor, the Time Lord, and the alien, and the humans.
Right.
Well, okay, you could argue that it's the TARDIS that somehow, like, jumped dimensions and landed in the subconscious.
But why could the Dalek time machine not do the same?
Exactly. Yeah, it just stands to reason that their time machine is just as efficient, if not more.
Their theory doesn't... Oh, it's a lot more, isn't it, really? But their theory doesn't really stand up. And it turns out they are completely
wrong. Exactly. Because we're in the Dalek time machine, and it turns out their theory is they're just full of crap.
And when the Daleks turn up, the first person they talk to is Frankenstein's monster?
Sort of. Well,
it appears in a grate behind Frankenstein's monster.
Just want to point out, when we're in the Dalek time machine, before they materialize inside the House of Nightmares, one of the Daleks... Actually, do you want to soundbite this?
Okay, soundbite.
Soundbite.
They only change their geographical and time location.
What else is there? What else? Their geographical and time location.
Yeah, that
this is a device that travels through space and time. The only thing they've changed is both of those things. Alright, so anyway, now the Daleks in the Nightmare Castle, and Doc and Ian, for no reason, go back to the monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then a Dalek appears.
In the grate.
Like Ian pushes some sort of lever, grate comes down, and then the Dalek tries to kill the monster, who's now, at this point, arisen, and is wandering not towards the two humans, but towards the Dalek.
But the Dalek can't kill the monster.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll come to this.
We'll come to this, yeah.
So the Dalek can't kill the monster. And in fact, when Ian and the Doctor run away...
Yeah, they assemble downstairs again.
Yeah, they all assemble downstairs, and they're trapped by the Daleks. The Daleks have them surrounded. But then the Daleks are distracted by, good evening, I am Count Dracula.
Yeah, and not just poorly dubbed Dracula, but also Frankenstein's creation. This is what I meant before. Who now turns up wearing a suit.
Yeah.
He was not wearing a suit before. He was dressed as a mummy.
But, okay. Well,
yeah, and they can't be killed.
Let's deal with it all together.
Fine, yeah. They can't be killed. Doc, Ian and Babs leave in the TARDIS, leaving Vicky behind.
Don't realise that they've left Vicky behind for what seems like ages. Like,
it seems like
they've been travelling on the ship for ages before they realise.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about everything that happens until we get there.
So, at that point, after they leave, we see Frankenstein picking up a Dalek, smashing it to the ground.
Like, yeah.
They can do nothing against these monsters.
Exactly. And we also get, the exterior of... We get the scene. Just like we saw the sign that said Mary Celeste on the boat, we now see, I guess, where you would pay to gain entrance to a funhouse.
Like $10.
A haunted house. Yeah. It says, Festival of Ghana, 1996. Cancelled by Peking... Right. Frankenstein's House of Horrors, price $10.
Okay,
so we have two nations represented, a third nation's currency, and no apostrophe in Frankenstein.
But they are saying that this funhouse exists at some point in the future.
Yeah, so it would stand to reason that Frankenstein's monster and Dracula are actually machines, like they are automatons. Yeah.
Well, they can't be humans, or they can't be like living beings, because otherwise the Daleks would have been able to kill them.
Yeah, on the other hand, the Daleks can blast machines to shit.
Yeah, and why is the monster able to lift a Dalek, and not be killed by a Dalek's rays, and then lift a Dalek and destroy it?
Why was this Festival of Ghana in 1996 cancelled by Peking, as in Beijing?
Because China's taken over the world by 1996.
Including Ghana.
Yeah.
Where you have a Transylvanian castle that mixes various horror stories.
It was 30 years in the future. Anything could have happened to Earth's politics. That's fair enough.
That's true.
But what is it that they've created that is suddenly able to withstand everything?
Well, the only thing that could withstand it is if, let's say that Doc and Ian's theory, their initial theory, were correct, that they are actually figments of mankind's imagination, or fears, rather.
Yeah.
That would be reasonable. They cannot be killed because they are just imaginary.
So are they like living holograms for like a fun show?
They would be holograms because they can destroy stuff.
Well, they can lift stuff.
Yeah.
I can't see any way in which this can possibly make sense. And also, we do earlier, like in a previous serial, see future London. We see London in like 2054.
Yeah.
There's nothing like so advanced that it's, able to withstand a Dalek attack.
Exactly.
So what the hell's happened in a funhouse in 1996?
Yeah. Anyway,
it's just mind-boggling.
It's one of those weird mind twisters that just curls your medulla into a pretzel.
Yeah, because it obviously makes no sense.
Yeah. So anyway, we fade back to the TARDIS. Doc is repairing the time circuitry, and then after another minute or so, Babs turns up, sort of leisurely asks, "Hey, where's Vicky?" And we get the old "I thought she was with you" trope.
Yeah, they've left her behind.
Yeah. So now we cut to the Dalek time machine. They're tracking the TARDIS. Apparently, they're approaching the planet Mechanus.
Yeah.
Which, again, let's have a place named after what this particular episode is about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Not like what the planet is about, but what this particular episode is about. And the Daleks are saying, is the reproducer repaired? Because, and manufacture will commence at once, because they've basically got this 3D printer, right? And this reproducer is building a allegedly exact replica of the Doctor.
I've got a quote from Dalek 347.
I've got 347 in my notes as well.
When he comes out, it is impossible to distinguish from the original.
Yeah.
Like a clearly entirely different actor.
Yeah, it's the guy. It's the doppelganger. It's the guy from Keys of Marinus in the Botanist.
Oh right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's him.
It's the same guy.
But we haven't gotten to him yet. The Daleks go off screen, and then all of a sudden Vicky turns up because she snuck on board the time machine.
Yep.
And she uses the Dalek radio.
Yeah,
to no avail.
She's trying to contact TARDIS. No dice.
And then she spots fake Doc, henceforth Fock, brewing inside the reproducer. Cut back to the TARDIS.
Yeah, and the Doc's blaming himself for losing Vicky.
They're all blaming themselves for abandoning Vicky in a house of nightmares. Surrounded by Daleks and cobwebs, but secretly they're all pleased that they'll never have to deal with her again.
So the Doctor comments at this point to Ian, says let's go back for her, that the TARDIS can't land in the same place twice.
Yeah, actually, I noted that as a soundbite. He says this to Babs. He says, you of all people should know that the TARDIS can't land in the same time.
Why?
Yeah, exactly. So
why should she of all people?
Okay,
know
so
that?
Well,
obviously because they want to go home, but
yeah, exactly,
like,
exactly.
That's all like a thing.
But they are operating under the assumption that they will eventually get home, right? So why would she of all people know that they can't? And also, can't it?
And also, later he says he's been trying to get them.
Yeah. So if it can't, so why would he be trying?
Yeah.
It makes no sense whatsoever. But Ian's got a plan. They're going to hijack the Dalek time machine and use it to get back to the Ghanaian cars of their nightmare.
Yeah, assuming they know how to work the Dalek time machine.
Yeah.
Which apparently is very easy.
Oh my god, he teaches them later on how to use it in about 15 seconds.
Less.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like 5 seconds. Walks in, walks out.
Yeah. Cut back to Dalek time machine. This is my note about 347, by the way. This is where it turns up there. Vicky is trying the radio again. Fock appears to be waking up now. And 347 is asked when they'll arrive on Mechanus, and he replies, and I quote, in Earth time in 4 minutes. Why in Earth time, Dalek 347? Why? Oh, for the love of all that is good and pure in the universe, why would you tell your commander how long in Earth time?
Yeah, it's kind of like you're driving somewhere in a car and you're like, yeah, how far is it to London? Oh, it's 778 fathoms.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Good to know.
However, prefacing it by, in this archaic means of measuring. Anyway, so they activate Fock, and he looks nothing like the Doctor.
Nothing like the Doctor whatsoever, but apparently it's impossible to distinguish him.
Yeah.
And he's really badly dubbed. Like, the dubbing is worse than it is with
Dracula.
Like, far more noticeable.
Yeah, but I am 99% sure that he's the doppelganger from Marinus.
Okay, well, that's...
And Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Worth checking.
Totally. So cut to Mechanus.
But, well, at this point, this is the end of episode 4.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So we see the Doctor talking, like Fokker talking.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well,
episode 5, the death of Doctor Who.
Yeah, actually, hang on, wait, sorry. There is one more thing at the end. So before we see the Fock talking, we cut to Mechanus. It's all swampy. Doc says, it's quite safe to go outside. That's a direct quote. Then we cut back to the Dalek time machine. And this is, I actually need to consult my notes here because this is the order. Cut back to the Dalek time machine where Fock, who's clearly played by different actor, is poorly dubbed by William Hartnell, confirming the Dalek orders to infiltrate and kill, and then we get a close-up of him, and it's freaking Hartnell now.
Yeah.
So
but that happens a few times.
Oh, several times, yeah, and then, like...
Which makes the whole thing so confusing.
That is my note. Guess how confused the people of 1965 must have been. That is literally my note. Ugh. So that's, end of episode. Episode 5, the death
of Doctor Who, which kind of sounds epic.
It does, but...
Okay, so the reference there, like, this one does have a reference.
Mm-hmm.
It's the death of the robot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, exactly.
So that's all it can be.
This is the first time that it is actually relevant.
It's still misleading, don't get me wrong. It's a massively misleading title.
Sure.
But anyway, so they step out, the troop come out onto the planet Mechanos, which is apparently safe.
It's this swampy place filled with weird tentacle mushrooms.
Yeah.
I looked them up on the interwebs, by the way. They refer to them as fungoids.
Yeah.
But they are most often referred to online as garbage cones, because that's how they were referred to in the production notes. So the people who actually constructed these and in the sets, production notes, whatever, people refer to them as garbage cones, and they are never referred to as garbage cones in anything other than a couple of novels and I think, comic book series or graphic novel series. And apparently they're like this incredibly advanced civilization.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite interesting.
According to canon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, all right, fine.
But they're everywhere.
They are everywhere.
They're really aggressive. There seems to be no defense against them either.
Yeah, except then all of a sudden this light is turned on. The garbage cones retract, and the light forms a corridor, which they even acknowledge must have been, like,
turned on. Yeah, by a higher being.
Exactly.
Or
but then they don't discuss it. They're like, oh, it's fine, let's just walk along here.
Yeah, but there are sentient beings. Like, it does make sense in...
Yeah.
We cut back to the Daleks.
Yeah.
They're having a discussion about how dangerous Mechanus is. They're saying they have to proceed anyway, but they're going to take casualties. Like, the life forms on Mechanus are so bad, the Daleks are going to take casualties.
Yeah, and they not only land, like, they take Fock with them.
Yeah.
And he, once again, the different actor. And let's just take a moment to consider what the Daleks do here, because they have built a supposedly identical copy of the Doctor, so that it shall, and I quote, infiltrate the group, right? Presumably to impersonate the Doc in order to get close to and then kill the rest of the troop, right? But then the Daleks even freaking say that two of them will follow Fock as an escort.
Well, that makes sense more when you see Fock in a fighting situation. He's not very strong.
Like, he's not strong at all.
For a robot who is sent.
Yeah, but if he's meant to
assassinate people.
If he's, I guess they could pop along to, like, protect Fock from the garbage cones.
Yeah.
Okay, alright, I take it back.
Like,
sorry.
He's not, he can't really defend himself. Like, he gets beaten up by the Doctor.
That is true. anyway, yeah, so...
So they send him in.
Yeah, and then Vicky leaves.
Yeah, and Vicky comes out of the ship.
Yeah.
Which she would, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I suppose, does she know? Well, she does know, right?
Well, she must assume that they have followed the troop somewhere, that they are there.
Because she's seen Fock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's not that stupid she gets out of the ship. So
we get this montage of Vicky Vought sneaking past Daleks into the tentacles of a garbage cone, and then we get Fock Vought following Doc and Co.
Yep. And then we see the troop, they follow to the end of the corridor, and they found, like, a cave.
Yeah, exactly.
And inside there, they found, like, a light flute. That's the only way I can really describe
it. Yeah, oh, that's nicely put.
But it's, like, you can shine it at fungus things.
Yeah, exactly, because they don't like
it's light. It's like a taser, but...
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Taser
except
for a fungus.
Literally just a flashlight at the end of a stick.
Yeah, and they get really excited by it, and it's like...
Babs plays... Says,
like, we can take over the world with this.
Yeah, exactly. She plays cowboys and garbage cones with it.
Yeah.
And Doc says something that is of importance. He says they can't use the machine in an enclosed area or they'll all go kablamo. But, okay, as far as I know, that is very true.
Yeah.
But at this point in the story, I thought that was the time circuitry. That the only reason they brought it along was that because they have to use every minute, like time counts, every second counts, he needs to repair the time circuitry, right? But it turns out it's not time circuitry, it's like a bomb.
Yeah.
I thought this was what he was repairing to fix the TARDIS.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't get that.
Okay, well, I must have misunderstood this completely. Anyway, then, yeah, so Vicky finds the TARDIS.
So, yeah, get back to Vicky. She's found the TARDIS, but there's no one home.
She runs away from a very rapey garbage cone.
Yeah, they hear her cries, the troop, inside the cave, and they run out to find her.
Yeah, Doc and Ian run out to save her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bab stays put, and as Doc and Ian run past the camera, Fock appears out of the shadows, once again the doppelganger, obviously, and while ID try to help Vapor Rub, and they actually find her, Fock, now played by Hartnell, enters the cave where Babs is waiting. And this is fucking dumb.
But I suppose it had to be played by Hartnell at that point.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how would anybody believe that Barb would actually buy it?
I kind of feel like they should just have stuck with the doppelganger the whole time. Maybe dubbed the doppelganger, but stuck with the same actor the whole time, because it is mega confusing, man.
Yeah.
But what happens in the cave is so dumb, because Fock tells Babs that Ian is dead, and then goes, can you come and help me? Like, come with me, perhaps you can help.
Yeah.
He's dead.
Yeah.
You've just told her that presumably the love of her life is dead, but maybe she can rescue him.
And she doesn't seem that upset.
No, not really.
Like, she's kind of put out.
Yeah, she does totally buy that he is the Doctor.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, what she wouldn't expect a robo-doc, would she?
No, that's true. So they leave, and then Div are in the cave, and Babs and Fock are, I guess, out somewhere else.
Well, Ian carries Vicky, who's unconscious.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
The Doc attends to Vicky while Ian goes out to try and find Bob.
Yeah.
But when Vicky wakes up, she's afraid of the Doctor.
Yes, that's
true. And then she explains to the Doctor and to Ian why she was afraid.
Exactly.
And it's the robo.
So now they know that Fock is out there.
Yeah. And then they realise that Barb must have been taken by Robo-Doc, because why else would she have left Cave? She's not that stupid.
Exactly.
She is. But... This is our working theory.
Yeah.
So
they run off, leaving the machine behind, by the way. away. And we cut to Falk trying to kill Babs.
Yeah.
But he's then chased away by Sir Ian.
Yeah.
And then we get this sort of, I guess, kind of classic TV showdown where...
Like, that's what I had. Predictably, we get two docs in one place. Like,
exactly.
It's always going to happen.
Yeah, where the Notorious B.I.V., they're faced with both Doc and Falk, and we don't know which one's which. Yeah. In fact, we don't, because at this point, both are played by Hartnell.
Yeah.
We cut between them. And then Doc and Falk fence for a bit, and Falk is destroyed.
Well, no, first of all, Ian quite obviously chooses the wrong Doc.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
He starts attacking the real Doc.
Also pretty classic.
Which is also classic.
Yeah.
And the other one's completely giving himself, Robodoc's completely giving himself away. Yes, very good, Justin, very good.
Yeah.
It's not, it's like sinister, evil undertones. Yes, like bash his head in, destroy it.
Yeah. But yeah, so Falk is destroyed, so much for the Dalek master plan.
Yeah, so the Doctor destroys it. Which leads me back to my previous point. Why did they build such a shoddy robot?
Yeah.
Like, if its only use is to kill the troop, like, obviously it needs to infiltrate the troop first, but surely give it some weaponry.
Yeah, why did you have to make it so authentic that it's as strong as an elderly gentleman?
Like, forgive me if I'm wrong and misremembering.
Go for it.
The Doctor kills Robodoc.
Yeah. By pulling wires out of its chest.
No, but doesn't he? It's a bit like at the start of the episode where Ian pulls the ring from the ground. He, like, takes a ring from his chest and, like, pulls it, and there's a string just falls out.
Yeah. And also, why did the Daleks not build a plunger into Falk?
Yeah.
Like, they could have built a bomb into Falk.
Surely Falk has many, many design faults.
Much better. Turn Falk into a wandering bomb.
Yeah.
So that when they are together, when they are fighting, even if he loses, just, detonate.
Whatever.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
so anyway, we now come back to the cave where the troop decide, you know what, let's nap.
Yeah.
Let's take it easy. And the Daleks, meanwhile, on the other side of the jungle.
Well, they're spying on them. Well, someone's spying on them. There's a camera.
That's sleeping. That's the mechanoids.
Yeah, it's the mechanoids. It turns out to be the mechanoids.
Yeah. But we get a full minute of footage of them sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a minute in sleeping footage, that equals a night of sleeping, right? That's what that is, to me anyway. And meanwhile, coincidentally, the Daleks have decided, you know what, we're not going to continue our search until daybreak. Are you shitting me? Like, you are inside robots, whatever, suits. Yeah. Why don't you just put on some night vision goggles or something, go get them, because now, surely, is when the humans are at their most vulnerable. And I get that the garbage cones are very dangerous at night.
And Daleks don't sleep.
No, why would they sleep? Like, we're going to continue at daybreak. Meanwhile, Ian, supposedly on guard, is just out in the open sleeping, and he is attacked by nary a garbage cone. Nor I don't know if that's the correct usage of nary, but yeah, neither garbage cone nor Dalek. Absolutely unreasonable. But while they sleep, yeah, this weird sort of periscope bobs down.
Yeah.
And it's clearly a mechanoid.
But anyway, come daybreak, they look up outside of the cave, and all of a sudden, they see a beautiful, white, resplendent city.
Yeah, I think this trope henceforth needs to be the Terry Nation trope, where they stand right next to something, in this case underneath something, but they haven't realized it until they have to, according to the plot line.
Yeah, because there was no light whatsoever in the cave. Even though they were wandering around chatting.
Yeah, but more importantly, was there no light coming from the city? Like, surely they would have noticed a massive, white, shining city, especially at night. Especially at night.
Yeah.
Or do the mechanoids turn all the lights off?
I don't know how it works. Maybe it's translucent. I don't...
Maybe.
Whatever. So they see the city, but no sooner do they see it than they're surrounded by Daleks.
Yeah.
And Ian comes up with a plan. The Doctor has to pretend to be the robot.
Mm.
Which the Doctor... thinks is a really good idea. Everybody kind of works out that's not a very good idea, because obviously the Daleks are going to work it out. It's their robot.
Yeah.
But the Doctor runs off and does it anyway.
Yeah. Very brave of him.
Yeah. But it was kind of a confusing scene. I thought he'd been shot.
I thought so as well.
It very much sounded as though he's been shot, and when he came back in, he was clutching his stomach.
Yeah, I think he's just what's that called?
Out of breath.
Yeah, what's that called when you run and all of a sudden you got a pain in your side?
Oh, a stitch.
A stitch. Yeah, he's just got a stitch. Anyway, so the Daleks are about to enter the cave and kill the shit out of the notorious B.I.B. and Doc, aka I guess fake Doc, as in fake Fock. But he stalled them just a little bit, and even though ultimately this is to no avail, that stalling helps them get away because mm-hmm. the cave wall just sort of opens and a mechanoid appears and welcomes them in.
Well, we don't know what it is at this point, but it's like a multi-sided robot.
Yeah, it's this gigantic sphere.
It calls itself a mechanoid.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, that's how we find out it is a mechanoid.
Okay.
It calls itself a mechanoid and tells them, like, English input, enter, or something like that. And they've got no choice.
Yeah, exactly.
They're surrounded by Daleks.
Yeah.
End of episode 5.
Episode 6, the final episode, The Planet of Decision. So they're in the lift, they're heading upstairs, and it's one of those very awkward scenes, like you're in the lift with someone, you kind of feel like you need to carry on a conversation, you don't really want to, you don't know what to say.
Yeah.
This fat blob of a robot isn't saying a word.
There's not even any Muzak in the lift, it's just
exactly.
It's very awkward.
By the way, I've got trivia about the robot things. They were meant to feature much more heavily in the episode.
They really should have.
Yeah, they really should. As in, I guess, both episodes 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't because the actors inside found it so difficult to move around in them. Because on occasion, they wouldn't even fit through the doors. So they were like cut out of the story, mostly. Anyway, they arrive at the city. We get a little soundbite. Can we have a soundbite? We haven't had one in a while.
Okay, soundbite.
Soundbite.
It's huge.
That's what she said. But we get a little cutscene of the Daleks. They've turned up in the cave. They can't find the troop, but they've tracked the troop's movements and realize that they have to go through this wall.
Essentially.
To get there.
Yeah, so then we go back up to the city.
And we get some amazingly poor, to be honest, miniatures.
Really? I thought they were beautiful.
I didn't like it.
Oh, really?
I didn't like it at all.
Well, they clearly thought they were beautiful because they used the same shot twice.
Yeah.
I thought it was really well done. Like, I think someone spent a lot of time. I'm gonna use a verb that may seem controversial. Baking that prop. That looked like pastry to me. Anyway.
You're saying this is a good prop?
I thought it was
it
beautiful.
It looks like pastry.
It even has like a tiny, unpresuming marzipan mechanoid that travels along the bridge. Yeah, very nice.
Which is great. Well, like, I was wondering what was going to happen when they showed that miniature of the mechanoid moving. Because obviously the troop are behind the mecha. So I was thinking, are they going to have miniatures of the troop?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I was thinking that as well. Yeah, I know. But you only see a mechanoid. You don't see anyone.
And you should have seen
it. Yeah.
Like, it would have made more sense. But whatever. That's too hard.
So they stop the outside door. The mechanoid goes, enter, zero, stop.
Yeah, which never made any sense.
Yeah, and then they go into what actually looks like the monkey enclosure at a zoo.
It is.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and a man, Peter Purvis, comes down the stairs.
Is Peter Purvis a celebrity?
He was a Blue Peter presenter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think Office.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was absolutely sure that he was going to be the next companion. Because I haven't...
Is he not?
Well...
I thought he was.
They leave him on the planet. Do they not? They don't take him.
I assume they took him.
I assume they didn't. That's my final... Spoiler alert. That's my final note. In my notes, it's just like, where the fuck is the Steedmeister? Anyway, yeah, so...
So he starts asking them questions if they're from Earth, who won the wars, and declares himself Steven Taylor, an astronaut. Apparently, he crash-landed somewhere, like, on the planet.
Yeah, so after all the wars, I guess, mankind tried to colonize this planet.
Yeah, we've done this in the wrong order, so yeah. That's the first thing. Mankind tried to colonize the planet. They sent the mechanoids ahead.
Yeah, 50 years prior to this.
Yeah, to sort of sort out the planet first. But because they got involved in some, like, interplanetary wars, they never actually sent people to this colony.
But now they have. So this was actually going to be a question for you, because I'm not entirely sure. Are the mechanoids the robots they sent there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I assumed. So the people of this planet are robots that are essentially 50
years... There are no people.
No, I know. As in, quote-unquote, the people of this planet, the inhabitants of this planet, are the mechanoids that are man-made robots.
Yeah.
Yeah. That were sent there to prepare the planet for the human colonists.
That's right, yeah.
The robots, these maintenance droids, are called mechanoids. The planet is called Mechanus. The planet. So they named the planet, not just humans, even Daleks have named the planet according to the naming convention of the robots that were sent there by humans.
I don't think that doesn't make sense.
That is dumb, dude.
Well, the humans...
They would call it Earth 2. So when
they call it whatever the, why would they call it Earth 2?
Why would they call it Mechanus? Why would they call it Mechanus? It's like, oh, so
because they're sending mechanoids there. I don't know. Do they use mechanoids on every mission? Maybe this is the first time they use mechanoids. Okay. Like, oh, handy name.
Handy name. Let's call it Mechanus.
That's the place with the mechanoids.
You know the channel tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it called the channel tunnel and not like digging equipment us? Like, you don't name a place after the thing, the tool that you use to build it. Oh, God, I hate that. This is the one instance where I actually hate the name. Anyway, yeah, so
anyway,
he's been there. He's been in this monkey enclosure for 2 years.
Yeah, and the only reason he's there is because he crash-landed.
Yeah.
And the mechanoids are essentially keeping him a prisoner. And he also says that they're keeping him like an exhibit in a zoo.
Mm.
But
why?
For who?
Why? I don't get it.
Yeah, but like, seriously, you only have a zoo as an attraction.
Yeah.
So who is the attraction for?
Yeah, and why have the mechanoids gone all bonkers?
I assumed the mechanoids like didn't validate Steve when he turned up, so they were expecting colonists who were probably like organized and like,
but there's only one survivor from this crash.
Yeah,
and like, oh,
they've got no data on, so they're like, he must be an enemy.
Actually, I think you're completely right, because Babs says something like, oh, but why can't we be the colonists, and he says,
yeah, they know.
Yeah,
they know that you're not.
Yeah, you're right, you're totally right. Meanwhile, the Daleks are preparing to invade the city, and the Daleks call them Mechons, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. Well, as far as I could tell, and I think I may have read that as well. Anyway, Steven, it turns out, has built a fort, a jungle gym, and a set of stairs, the stairs lead up to the roof, because I guess when he first arrived, the Mechanoids furnished him with a Spartan bed, and tools, and basically a fort and a staircase worth of perfectly sawed planks. So yeah, that he could build.
He's got like a little roof guard. With some cabling.
With some cabling. He's
going to become important.
Yeah, he's been there for 2 years. And he says, like, oh, we're allowed up to the roof. That's cool, because there are no guards up there. I'm totally allowed up there.
Yeah.
There's no way down.
Yeah.
And they go, well, you know, we can take you away in our ship.
He says that, but when they go up and have a look and notice that there's some cabling that can reach all the way to the ground, when they come back and approach him about that, he says, yeah, I thought of that, but I couldn't do it alone.
Yeah, I know. But he said he's been there for 2 years, and instead of at least entertaining the thought a little bit more, and maybe, you know what, if I had been a zoo prisoner, like a zoo attraction.
Yeah, I'd have probably jumped.
I would either, well, I probably wouldn't have jumped, but I would have made a go at it. Like, I would have tried to get down.
Tied it around your waist.
Exactly. And go back to like the crashed spaceship. But he actually does say, it's, you know what, you're going to find that it's better here than out there.
Yeah.
Because he is a nutbag. He is a total nutbag. He even has like a little mascot, a tiny little teddy bear.
Oh yeah, I neglected to mention
that. Yeah, he has a little teddy bear that he like introduces.
Crazy. Like, we will see how crazy.
Oh, he is.
Later.
He's such a nutbag. He's even named this mascot. Like, this mascot is
his Wilson.
I was gonna say his mascot is his Wilson. That is exactly what it is. But yeah, okay. So they're now up on the roof. Ian nearly falls over the edge. They're 1,500 feet above ground. Quite a tumble.
But we should mention that before they lower themselves, the doctor goes back downstairs and lays the bomb.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, actually, before he does that even, the Daleks are... They turn up. Because, okay, so... Sorry.
Oh, wait, no, I've got it. I remember it. The doctor, they hear the Daleks outside. They're discussing whether they should lower themselves down because it's so dangerous. Then they hear the Daleks outside. So they've got no choice. They have to run.
Yeah.
So, okay, we are sailing down. At that point, the doctor says, okay, I'm going to leave a little present for you. And that's when he puts down the bomb. They run upstairs and they start abseiling down.
Well, before they do that, hang on. They all go back downstairs. And we cut to outside the enclosure, exactly where we got the English 00, enter, stop, whatever, where a mechanoid is conveniently opening the cell blinds in order for Vicky, Doc, Ian, Babs, and Steve, aka V-Dibs, to see a Dalek confronting it. So that's how they find out that there are Daleks. And that's where we get the little bit where, well, I guess the doctor, like, turns on the machine, like, prepares it for an explosion.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Daleks are now firing on the mechanoids. The circuit goes off, or the bomb goes off, and the Daleks are all incapacitated. But the mechanoids aren't, right? Like, are they actually incapacitated? I don't think so. But there is a Dalek who actually says, I am exterminated.
Yeah.
Anyway,
which I assumed was by the bomb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
it's like electromagnetic pulse or something. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, all hell starts breaking.
Yeah, we get the Vicky great acting scene, though.
Well,
well, by Vicky standards.
By Vicky standards.
This is the best acting that what's her face? Vicky Plainface?
Yeah, she's terrified, basically. Oh, of,
so scared. Of heights.
Of heights. So being lowered is a horrible proposition.
Mm. So what they decide is, let's put a blindfold on this poor girl, tie a rope around her waist, and then lower her.
So she, yeah, so she can do it blind. Great.
Yeah, she's crying and screaming. They start to lower her. Steve is holding onto the rope.
Yeah.
Benny remembers, fuck it, I left my teddy bear.
Well, because the room below is on fire, because the Daleks have blown up, fuck it, I left my teddy bear, runs back down there, drops the rope, and like, Ian has to, like, desperately grab onto.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We get another shot of the miniature at this point, beautiful miniature, but at this point, in the miniature shot, it's extended, and we zoom into what looks like, I guess, an atrium or something, where we have both miniature mechanoids, or mechons, and the miniature Daleks.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I saw that. And we get this massive Dalek mechanoid bumper car brawl.
Yeah.
Well, okay, the two most unwieldy, least practically designed, most inconvenient, and least ergonomical robots in the history of television battle it out to see whose rubbish arsenal is the most hench. That is what happens. And it's almost like it looks like this weird robot gangbang. Like, they're just...
And who wins? I mean, essentially, they both lose, don't they?
Yeah, they do kind of lose. At this point, we cut to the surface... as in the grounds.
Yeah.
The troopers all arrived, and even the doc, who's an old, frail man with like weak bones and hips, has no trouble spelunking. And they go, should we wait for the Stevemeister? And they're like, fuck the Stevemeister. He's totally a goner.
He's
probably.
Just with his bear. It's fine.
Yeah. And to be fair, he is a goner.
He's died with something else.
Yeah. Cut to a huge explosion engulfing the city.
Yep. And then that massive building collapsing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a towering inferno. Then some time passes.
I guess, because they're...
Well, everything settles down, it's all fine.
Yeah, exactly. They're now at the Dalek time machine.
Yeah, we hear a Dalek.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. Go for it.
I can't remember what the Dalek says, but...
You will be exterminated.
You will be exterminated. I have you now. turns out it's Ian.
Oh, so what a kidder.
What a crack. Considering what they've just been through, that's pretty poor taste. Seriously, has Vicky not got post-traumatic stress disorder?
Probably.
And he's just, what an arsehole.
It is really weird, though, because when Ian, he kids around exiting the time machine, like he has clearly gone in to investigate, comes back out, and they have this sort of very fond reunion with Ian. But weren't they already together?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed to me almost as though...
For, like, quite a long time. Enough time for the inferno to have stopped.
Oh, yeah. But like, how long was he in there? Did they? It's almost as though a few pages of the script were just cut out, because it would fit in better if they had been separated once again.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, they all escaped together, so why?
Yeah, but the only logical conclusion I can draw is that they have a fond reunion because they're about to say farewell. But then again, the doctor's reaction...
They don't know they're going to say farewell.
No, but the script writers know. So they, like, pen this very fond scene between them where they're like... Yeah. The doctor even says, oh, I could kiss you. And the only reason I can think of is that they wanted, well, let's all have like a very friendly gathering before we say goodbye to these characters. But then again, the next thing that happens is the doc just basically telling them to go fuck themselves, totally undoing the fondness of the prior scene. Anyway.
So, Barb brings up the idea.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, like, says, well, actually, this time, like, spaceship actually works. We can go where we want. Why not go home?
Yeah.
But, so I thought it's a very accurate time machine, the Dalek time machine. So
they go to 1964?
Exactly. What, 1963?
Sorry, 63.
Yeah, they can pinpoint exactly where they need to go. In fact, the Daleks were pinpointing where the TARDIS was going to, like, the nth degree.
You could argue that it is being maneuvered by two teachers.
That's true.
And therefore, it's not as precise as
the doctor gave them a very detailed instruction on how to use
10 seconds.
In the 10 seconds.
Dalek time machines for dummies.
But we do get a little cutscene just after Ian and Barb are talking about
the Stevemeister.
Of Steve,
yeah.
He's fighting his way through the fungus.
Yeah, he's clutching his teddy bear like this bearded madman. And then we just cut back to the troop. So he has survived.
Yeah.
I don't remember there being a scene where he joins Doc and Vic.
No, I think you're right.
I think he is literally just left on the planet because they think he's dead.
Yeah, and we do see Doc and Vic leave, don't we?
Mm.
Like, we get a little sequence.
Yeah, I haven't seen the next episode. If he is going to be the next...
I assumed he was
going
to be me.
In my notes, he is the future companion.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if he is the future... And I thought I'd read somewhere that he was the next companion.
Like, he's going to be a tremendously irritating future companion.
Oh, God, he's just constantly walking around with his fucking teddy bear.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, that's just a cutscene, you're right. And then, go for it.
So then Ian and Barb tell the Doc they want to go home. And yeah, as you said, he's really fucked off. Yeah. He says, you are absolute idiots. Like, basically because...
that's not all he says.
He says a lot of stuff.
We have a soundbite as well.
Soundbite?
Soundbite.
You'll end up as a couple of burnt cinders flying around in space.
Be fair, you know, Hartnell's emotional. Like, yeah. He's losing 2 grand. Yeah.
True. True that.
But Ian's really passionate about leaving, but the doctor's just not having
any
of it.
He's refusing.
He says, you're going to die, it's too risky, etc., etc.
Yeah, but then Vicky turns up.
He's just throwing a strop, essentially. He's saying, like, yeah, I've been trying to get you home for 2 years, as if it's, like, okay, because he's been trying.
Yeah, and he also says, you forced yourself into my time machine, but the point of fact is, you fucking kidnapped them, dude. They actually wanted to leave. They genuinely wanted to exit your TARDIS.
And have wanted to go home
ever since.
You are, in fact, still holding them in a kidnap situation.
Yeah, but given their total nonchalance about being in 1965 New York... 66, New York. Gotta say, I it is kind of out of the blue that they absolutely want to go back home.
Yeah.
You know, it is a little bit. Anyway, so he refuses, but then Vicky turns up and says, no, let them go, they want to go. He goes, yeah, I suppose you want to go as well. And she goes, no, I want to be with you.
Oh, great.
Kind of get Lolita vibes here.
All fans are really pleased to hear that as well, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're losing Ian and Barb, but great, we get to keep Vicky. Wonderful.
Anyway, the Doc relents.
Yeah.
He's going to show them how to use the time machine. He says they have about a 50-50 chance of survival. And then it turns out you can learn how to maneuver a Dalek time machine in maybe 10 seconds.
Yep.
He leaves them in, comes back out, the time machine dematerializes. He doesn't even want to look at the time machine dematerializing because he's so emotional.
Well, he's depressed.
Yeah.
Basically.
So then we cut to London.
Yeah, and we get loads of... Well, first of all, we confirm it's 1965. Ian sees a tax disc on a car.
Yeah, it's his car. It's their car that they parked outside
the... Oh, it's actually his car? I didn't realize.
I think so.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, well, I assume
no,
so.
No, it can't be because they have to get on the bus. Well, I suppose he's lost the key. but we get a load of still frame images.
Yeah, why?
Basically of them frolicking.
Yeah,
London.
And being shat upon by pigeons in Trafalgar Square. Why is this a stills montage?
I guess it's just to indicate happiness, maybe.
Oh,
it's like a scrapbook feel.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, look,
maybe they were actually so depressed about being kicked off the show. I don't know if they left voluntarily or not, but maybe they're just so sad about it that the only way to create a simulacrum of happiness is by just taking those instances, those still frames of them accidentally smiling.
Yeah, and then the last thing we see of them is them on a bus.
Yeah, and
getting the price wrong.
Is that what it is?
I thought that's what it was.
My note is conductor comes by, Ian cracks an inaudible joke. I didn't get it.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but he's like 3 and 2 or something, and the guy's like 3 and 2. You've been on the moon.
Like, yeah, close. Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah. How are they paying for it? By the way,
that was exactly my point.
He has been wandering through time and space.
With change in his pockets.
Myriad costume changes, wardrobe changes, but still he has change in his pocket.
Yeah, and that's true. At the point he decided that they were going to go back, or he and Barb decided they were going to go back, he doesn't revisit the TARDIS to pick up his stuff.
No, exactly.
Gets straight in.
Yeah, yeah.
He just happened to have some loose change on him.
But yeah, it turns out Vicky and Doc are looking at them in the bus through the STV.
Yeah.
And I feel like we should have a soundbite because this is just the Doc pouring his heart.
Okay, soundbite.
Soundbite.
Yes, I assume so.
It is terribly sad.
It really is. It
kind of feels like the end of an era.
It very much so.
Totally is the end of an era. And actually, I'm kind of getting the sense at this point that it's, kind of the sense I have now, that the Doctor is the one holding the show together. Because up to this point, it was as much Ian and Barb show as it was the Doctor.
Oh, very often it was Ian and Friends.
Yeah.
And Barbara and Friends.
Well, like, there were episodes where the Doctor went on holiday, or, you know, it was fine. They were just the same cast. Like, so, same level. Like,
have you seen the next serial?
The Doctor is the hub.
I know, but have you seen the next serial?
No.
I haven't either. But, and I was genuinely convinced that Stephen was going to be the next companion. Very possibly he is. But there are only two options. Either he somehow snuck onto the TARDIS, because we do not get a scene here. But after the line, the Doctor line, they dematerialize in the TARDIS. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
We then just cut to the vortex of the TARDIS spinning around in space. Mm-hmm. But we don't see a scene of Stephen getting on board the TARDIS or meeting up with DV or VD.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like that. So there are only two options. Either he snuck onto the TARDIS or they go back for him, which they obviously will not.
And also the TARDIS can't go two places.
Yeah, that's true. Apparently. So, oh, yeah. Actually, hang on. There is one more thing. Before they get on the bus, Babs and Ian, they blow up the Dalek time machine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they blow up the time machine. Why would you do that?
I couldn't work out if they'd blown it up or whether they just sent it away somewhere.
I thought they blew it up.
Yeah, it seemed like they blew it.
I think so. No police arrived, by the way. But, yeah, they blow up the time... Well, at least they don't have the time machine anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea, right?
Is it?
Well, they've just been kidnapped for 2 years. They want nothing to do with time travel.
They have a time machine. Yeah. What if they change their minds? What if it turns out that in the 2 years that have passed since they left London, the world has gone to hell?
Yeah.
You. What if they go... You know what? It'd be
a good backup plan.
It'd be nice to have a plan B.
Yeah.
Yeah, is my point.
Or even, seeing as they still have a time machine, go back to 1963 like they want.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, it did just seem like laziness on that part.
Let's just ensure that we never appear again.
Yeah.
By the way, spoiler alert, What's-Her-Face, who plays Babs, will return to the show.
Really?
Yeah, but she's going to play a different
character.
Jacqueline Hill, yeah, she's going to play a different character.
Really?
Yeah. Can't remember which Doctor.
What's the point of that?
Well, you know, we've got lots of actors turning up now and then. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, it's a family show.
We've had, Cribbins turn up in several iterations of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So, like, why not have Babs as well?
Okay, cool.
That's it. End of the chase.
End of the chase.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. God, that took a long time. Anyway, so reviews.
Reviews, yeah. I think you went first the last time.
Okay.
You know what? If you want to go ahead, go for it. I do not mind.
Okay. Well, as I said at the start of this episode, I'm still caught in two minds.
Yeah.
The top and tail of the episode, I really enjoyed. I kind of feel like, as I said during our podcast, we could have gone episode one, episode two, episode six. I mean, just all that filler in the middle just was completely unnecessary. The whole Scooby-Doo like plot sequence,
yeah,
going to the Mary Celeste, it just didn't add to the story at all in any way. So I kind of feel like this wasn't a very good way for Ian and Barb to bow out. I think they could have done a much, much stronger storyline for them. It kind of seemed like an afterthought, faculty.
Yeah.
I'd have liked a slightly more nuanced build towards them going home.
It just
didn't feel climactic in it.
Agreed.
Which I thought was really disappointing. Taking all of that into account, I'm going to give this episode a 2.6.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Simply because I was so disappointed to lose Ian and Barb in such a fashion, and because I felt there were three really superfluous episodes in this series. Other than that, enjoyed myself.
Nice. Okay. Once again, giving it a higher mark than you. I'm giving it a 2.9. And that's because what more is there to say, really? I mean, it's a 6-episode arc. Episode 1, very nice start to it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 6, great conclusion. I mean, I love the robot fight scenes, and I love the fact that there's a robot race and the crazy Ben Gunn-esque character on this planet. But everything in between is entirely meaningless.
Mm.
Okay, I liked episode 5 as well. So 2, 3, and 4 can go and shit themselves. I hate them. They're just filler. As you said, they are just fluff. So rating this, bumping it up for Daleks, because I love the Daleks. Bumping it down for the shitty portrayal of the Daleks. Bumping it up for the Mechanoids, bumping it down for the Mary Celeste, bumping it up for the fact that they had a very, very... Okay, let us say, even though it was rubbish, I kind of enjoyed the Empire State Building interlude. I thought that was fun.
I didn't. I just thought...
It was cringeworthy. I agree that it was cringeworthy, but it was still like fun in a comic relief kind of way. It was a nice interlude. Much better than having a Dalek fall overboard. Much better than having just slapstick stuff. It was kind of fun to have this stupid character. I enjoyed that.
I disagree.
Bumping it back down for the fact that the plot makes no sense whatsoever and that the Daleks could easily have killed them before the episode even started, before episode one even started. They have a time machine that can go anywhere. Why would you have to always stay a step behind them? Just go somewhere, right? And, yeah, shit, what can I say? 2.9. There are so many plot holes. There are so many things that don't... Oh, yeah, bumping it back down. Oh, fuck, can I change my score? I want to bump it down to 2.8 now. 2.8. I am allowing myself another decimal point. 2.8. I'm bumping it back down for Dracula. Dracula and Frankenstein's monster. They don't deserve
and
a 2.9.
And the Wailing Woman.
She was pretty cute.
That episode alone, if just taken alone, I mean, that's got to be 0.6.
Oh, that episode. Well, that episode is a little bit like, I don't know, Die Hard 5. You know, it never happened.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that. I wholeheartedly agree with what you said when we were still reviewing this. People who have not seen this serial, don't watch 2, 3, and 4. Watch 1, 5, 6 in that order. And just enjoy yourselves, because that's a pretty decent serial.
Yeah, and it will make sense just on its own.
Yeah, just pretend that 2, 3, and 4 were lost along with so many other series.
Yeah.
That's fine. So yeah, there you go, 2.8.
It's criminal, isn't it, really?
It really
is. The stuff that was kept compared to the stuff that was lost.
Right. Shall we maybe take a break here, see what the listeners said?
I believe we should.
Okay, well, people, we're going to be back in 1 second.
Cut this! TARDIS! 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 TARDIS!
Doctor, he said the TARDIS!
Kablamo, we are back, and we've got some great reviews, and we are sadly on a bit of a time constraint, so we're going to speed through these. But we've got some, you know, got some classic reviewers here.
They're always the classics.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
The reliable classics. Always pleased to have them.
Absolutely.
Well, they're excellent contributors, so I'm always pleased to have them.
They're fantastic! Alright, so we're starting off with Davis, of the Davis Principle fame.
And you can follow Davis at Shrub The. And Davis says... Here's another apparently hated serial that I absolutely loved. Maybe I just have a big heart, or the after effects of the web planet have lasted longer than I thought. Either way, this serial was pretty great. It starts off with Vicky finally learning what her use of the crew of the TARDIS is, namely getting in the way. Good for you, Vicky. The ship proceeds to land on the planet of unitard wearing lizard men. Of course, that's after we spend 10 minutes gazing into a machine that has little consequence to the plot. On this planet, Ian miraculously survives an explosion and pushes a Dalek off a cliff using Barbara's cardigan.
Soon enough, the crew escapes from the Daleks and lands on the Empire State Building. Here we find an American with a very distracting and insulting southern accent. The group leaves immediately, only to be replaced by the Daleks, who are made fun of by the American. The crew continues hopping from planet to planet in a quite nonsensical but very entertaining way.
The final battle happens on the planet Mechanus, where gigantic round robots trap everybody with a man named Steven. They send Vicky off the roof attached to a cable, against her will, of course. Good choice for a guinea pig, I might add. The Daleks and the robots fight in a huge explosion-y battle on a bridge, which I quite enjoyed.
Sadly, we must say goodbye to Ian and Barbara now. They will be missed, but at least they got a proper send-off. The end of the serial was essentially a photo album of the return to England. I liked it. This serial earned itself a 4.5, because I thought it was hilarious. It helps that the Daleks were doing comedy as well. I mark off for only a few reasons. First, they spent too much time on the time and space visualizer. Also, episode 4 had a very confusing ending, and I didn't understand what happened. Still, I love the episode, as I've said multiple times. Shamalama ding dong. Sorry, I had to. You know what? You're welcome to.
But you know what? I disagree.
Well, as you've probably learned over the past approximately 2 hours, I'm going to say, you know that I disagree as well. But Davis, you got a huge heart, man.
He really does.
Yeah, good on you.
Like anybody that can love Dracula, man.
Thank you very much for your review, Davis. And people who are not Davis, follow him on Twitter, at Shrubda, as the Flaphammer said. Next up, we've got Al. He is at phrase_Alex, And he says, it's so nice for you guys to be back. I really enjoy the last three serials. Yeah, thank you. I really enjoy the last three serials at the end of season two, despite the completely illogical nature of the Space Museum and the chase. Unfortunately, I'm too sick to review the chase, let alone rewatch the whole thing, so I'll share some of my favorite trivia about the production. Dude, I hope you're feeling better.
No, this is what I was saying during the episode.
Yeah, exactly.
It was Al. The Beatles were originally going to perform in studio in elderly makeup as part of their 1996 30th anniversary reunion tour for The Chase, as they were all big Doctor Who fans. Unfortunately, they were in the middle of filming Help, their second movie, which aired just a month after The Chase finished airing. This forced the BBC to use stock footage of them from Top of the Pops, a music show celebrating the pop hits of the day. As you guys know from Hartnell's Flubbing Lines, they were only allowed to do one take, which was often very close to air dates of the episode they were shooting. This clip serves as further proof of that extremely hectic production schedule, because it was on Top of the Pops just 1 month before the first episode was broadcast. I'll leave you guys to imagine the possibilities behind that.
And he's even provided a bit of a chronology. He says, 1965, April 15th, Beatles play on Top of the Pops. May 22nd, Chase episode 1 airs. June 26th, Chase ends. And then July, Help premieres.
Yeah. P.S. One positive effect of this production failure is that the clip used in this episode is the only surviving footage of the Beatles on Top of the Pops.
Which is such a crazy fact.
Yeah, that is mad, isn't it? How is that possible? Like, I don't even know how that's possible. Surely the Beatles, I mean, I only know the modern day incarnation of Top Pops, but like, surely the Beatles were all over.
And as I said, I've seen that gig. Like, well, I've seen footage of that gig. Maybe this is the footage I've seen, apparently. That's amazing.
Weird.
Yeah. Anyway, he does conclude with a little bit of a spoiler for the next one. He says, I will definitely review The Time Meddler because it is really a masterpiece serial and Hartnell's best. You guys should be so hyped for it.
I now am.
Dude, spoiler alert, so am I. That's fantastic. Al, thank you so much. Awesome as always. Next up, we got Kyle. Kyle Rath. Hello, Kyle. How you doing, dude? Kyle has, in, you know, classic Kyle tradition.
Kyle style.
Yeah, he's sent in a novel.
Yeah. Which is a fantastic read.
It really is.
Really,
yeah.
Good. But much better description of the episode than ours, as always.
But you can read that on the website. So just go to whobackwhen.com. You can read the review in its full splendor. But what we're going to do is we're going to read the last little bit where he sums up. Exactly. Sums up how he feels about this. Do you want to start off?
Yeah. So Kyle says, I actually really enjoyed this serial. From the jazzy strings going in and out of the episodes, the relentlessly pathetic attempts by the Daleks to catch and thwart the gang, it was quite a lot of fun. And the notion of Daleks versus a haunted house is so ridiculous, it almost makes perfect sense.
As a send-off of William Russell and Jaclyn Hill, I would have enjoyed a less than ambivalent goodbye. After the speech for Susan, I guess I expected more. Plus, frowny face, we're stuck with Vicky.
It does get slow at points, and watching, I felt we were dragged by lapels through the ending. But on the whole, the concept of the episode won me over. It had a distinctive Keys of Marinus feel throughout, and the fact that they weren't locked into a single set worked wonderfully.
Despite the mishmash of elements and slightly rushed feeling ending, I give the serial 3.5 overall.
Okay, well, you know, I can take on board the point that it's so ridiculous that you could enjoy it for its camp value. We did discuss that it did have some feelings of Keys of Marinus about it, but that's just the Terry Nation style, I guess.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, Terry Nation has some distinctive plots that he always seems to work in.
Yeah, I guess.
Distinctive plot points and distinctive tropes.
He's maybe in that sense a little bit of a predictable writer for Doctor Who. But yeah, anyway, awesome review. Seriously, I'm sorry that we're not reading it in full, but people, check it out on the website. And also, everyone who happens to not be Kyle Rath, you should follow Kyle on Twitter. He is at Sinister Super Spy. That's super without any vowels. Next up, Bingo Bongo. This is not nepotism of the Who Back When variety. But next up, in chronological order, we have JD. JD goes, Barbara and her companions are chased through time and space by the most pathetic Daleks ever. Then the unthinkable happens. No more Barbara and no more Ian. Will the show survive?
The good. Episode 1 is domestic bliss in the TARDIS. Knowing that the ending would change this forever makes it all the more poignant.
The amazing send-off of Ian and Barbara, considering Susan got abandoned and married off, this was a very powerful ending. And the Doctor's fluff of you'll end up as a couple of burnt cinders flying around in Spain and in space seems to be completely in character. He's really pissed off. I shall miss them, the silly old fusspots. And one more good point, the team leave Vicky behind in episode 4.
Well played. Yeah. The bad. The team find Vicky again in episode 5. Were the Daleks on drugs? TARDIS, 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 TARDIS. And speaking of dried up Daleks, what the hell was the Dalek smoking to not have exterminated Morton fucking Dill?
We were saying this a moment ago, JD. I think maybe we're going to have to ask you to elaborate on that one because we don't recognize that name. Anyway, next bad point. Vicky's irritation index is a 3.5. And in episode 1, what the hell is she laughing at every few seconds? Is she on the same thing that the Daleks have been smoking?
The Doctor's robot duplicate manages to look completely unlike the Doctor and yet fools Vicky. Irritation index now at 4.7.
He concludes, overall, bookended by a nice start and an amazing ending send-off for Ian and Barbara. The rest is just a mishmash of set pieces. It would score far lower if it wasn't for the ending. 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I can go along with that. And that's not matters.
No. Agreed. And people who are not JD, follow JD on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That's Kane with a K.
Anyway, thank you so much, JD.
Yeah, well done, dude. Thank you very much. And next up, we have one more. Okay, guess who this is? Actually, seriously, just take a moment. Guess who wrote this one? Hello, Gina Guerrero. You can follow Gina on Twitter. She is at GinaGuerrero1.
And Gina says, I can honestly say that I liked and actually enjoyed parts of the chase rather than the story as a whole. In the first two Dalek stories, the Daleks were terrifying and omnipotent villains. In the chase, Daleks are incompetent, blundering pepper pots that weren't very scary. The Daleks didn't feel the need to exterminate the various humans they encountered on the Empire State Building or on the ship, something they would have done in previous stories without hesitation. Good point.
Yeah. The chase does exactly what it says on the tin. The Doctor and the notorious VIB, nice one, are being pursued through time and space by the Daleks because, actually, I'm not sure why they are chasing him. The mix of stories and settings was not well executed and had been done better in The Keys of Marinus with more substance. We open with the crew watching a futuristic television that can show scenes throughout history, including Abraham Lincoln and Shakespeare and the Beatles. I laughed out loud, rewound, and laughed again at Ian's dancing.
That was terrific.
They eventually land on the planet Aridius with a population of aliens that looked like fishy tin men. They run into the Maya Beast, which looked like a lumpy comforter. Real scary.
Unfortunately, the rest of the story is tried and true trope of splitting up the group and the aliens selling out the Doctor to the Daleks. Daleks play cat and mouse for the next few episodes. We go to the Empire State Building, the crew running into one of the most offensive portrayals of an American I have ever seen. His accent, if you want to call it that, was horrendous. Then we're off to the high seas of the Mary Celeste, with some, I guess you can call it, hijinks. The bizarre haunted house sequences after that drag on for most of the fourth episode, and by now you can tell I began to lose interest and wish for the story to just end.
The final act of the chase plays out in the studio-bound forests of Mechanus, and matters do reach some sort of head. We're introduced to new companion Stephen Taylor.
There you go.
Yeah. Who, after the useless Morton Dill, fares much better here. It's nice to see a character that's a bit more headstrong and who doesn't automatically follow the Doctor's orders. And the teddy bear was cool.
No, it wasn't.
It really wasn't,
Who
Gina.
The fuck is Morton Dill?
I have no idea.
The chase is silly, rambling, and in parts incoherent, but I still enjoyed it. The last 10 minutes pulled me back into the story. It's the end of the line for Ian and Barbara, who finally discover a way of getting back to their own time and place, thanks to the Daleks' abandoned ship. The Doctor is totally against the idea, even going as far as to say if they use the ship, they will end up as burnt cinders floating around in Spain. Despite the angry Time Lord's protests, Ian and Barbara touch down safely in London and enjoy their freedom in a rather charming montage of still shots. Again, the Doctor's sad. I shall miss them. Yes, I shall miss them. It's wonderfully acted by Hartnell. I will miss them too.
She concludes, so my rating is a 3.3. Thanks, guys.
As always, wonderful review.
Beautiful review. And that's the last of our reviews. Thank you, everyone, for sending in your material. This is freaking amazing.
And people seem to rather enjoy it more than we did.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit surprised by that, I got to say.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I usually think I'm too positive about it. Like, afterwards, I'm slightly regretful. But no, it seems everybody really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I found it a little tiring through
the Yeah, same here.
Not be honest. Like, there were points at which I did slightly lose interest, because I kind of knew they were leading down a dark
fairly.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to say that they've made an uninformed decision in giving it a high mark, but it's very possible that if you spend upwards of 2.5 hours spewing vitriol all over this serial, then at the end of those 2.5 hours, you will not give it as high a mark as you would if you just considered it on your own.
That's quite true.
Mm.
That's quite true.
So apologies, people, if you think we're being too negative, but holy crap, this was awesome.
Yeah, I had a really good time recording it. But I'm told that the next episode, The Time Meddler, is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, in fact,
I'm super hyped.
I'm being told that as well. If you don't remember when we were told that, just rewind this podcast about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Looking forward to The Time Meddler, which is the end of season two.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
And holy crap, that guy is the next companion.
Well, I'm really interested to see, as you said, how he comes back into it.
Yeah.
Because as far as we know, he's just been left.
Maybe they're going to retcon it.
Rapey fungi.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's it.
He's going to turn up in the TARDIS, and like he found the TARDIS while they were saying goodbye to Vicky and Doc, I presume. And now that they're traveling through space and time all over the way, all of a sudden they've got a stowaway, basically, and that's him.
Yeah,
that's my guess.
Or if instead of exploding it, maybe they sent it back to where it came from, the Dalek time ship,
and he then used
it. He finds it, and then he tracks the Doctor.
Oh man, I cannot wait to see in what way both you and I are completely wrong about this.
Because he is like a complete nutter, right?
So he's a total nutbag. They're going to have to rewrite his character a little bit, because I'm not super keen on having the Doctor travel around with one super lame girl and a total idiot. Like, not an idiot, a total nutbag.
I don't know. He's quite a hefty guy, I suppose. He could like pull off some of Ian's...
Oh, well, he seems a lot more macho than Ian.
Yeah.
Plus, he's got a beard. A beard. Beards are macho, dude.
It's not possible to be more macho. Ian's like ultimate elf. In a cardigan.
In a cardigan. So, ladies and gentlemen, join us in our next TV serial review, The Time Meddler. But before we've got The Time Meddler, we're going to do another audiobook review. JD and I are back, and we're going to be reviewing Dead London.
You just can't get enough, Ken.
I just can't get enough. So thank you very much for listening. Come on, do us a favor. Follow us on Twitter. You are?
I'm at One Too Many Morning.
Yes, you are, and I'm at Ponkin. You know how to spell both of those. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. Subscribe to us and rate us on iTunes, please. Actually, please do rate and review us on iTunes, because we really do want more reviews. I think we've got 2 reviews, and one of them is from JD. That's absolutely insane, and we're actually pretty high up there. So it's weird correlation. I haven't really figured out social media.
Laziness, people.
Yeah. You have no excuse.
Yeah.
If you've listened this far, please leave a rating. And check out whobackwhen.com. This episode alone will have populated the visual index with approximately 5 billion more entries.
Yeah.
People, rock on.
Catch you on the flap side.
Ciao, ciao.
Who back when?